Blog Talk Radio.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Just seems to be saying the first thing that pops into his head.
Creating more jobs. So he seems to be bouncing around. The devil's in the details. The angel is in the policy.
Romney is losing it.
The Romney campaign is really struggling.
What's he going to offer?
What's your big idea?
Freedom.
Where is the core mix?
Are you willing to expose yourself?
I think this is an election about a choice. This is a campaign about a choice.
He seems to only have one note.
No, not Mitt Romney.
Tax cuts for the wealthy.
That's essentially it.
That is not a strategy to win. That is a strategy to lose.
I pay all the taxes that are legally required and not a dollar more.
The campaign released his 2011 tax documents.
The taxes that came out on Friday, on Friday afternoon, take out the trash day.
I pay all the taxes that are legally required. And not a dollar more?
Romney actually paid more than he needed to.
Well, he's the biggest shapeshifter outside of Harry Potter.
They are clearly worried.
We're going to win. There's no question in my mind.
Romney's not going to be president.
I think everybody knows that.
Well, if we don't run Chris Christie, Romney will be the nominee on the list.
It's Friday, October the 5th, 2012. It's 3:04 about. Do you know where your politicians are? And if you ask them, are you really working for your constituents? And they say, oh, of course. Look in your pocket. They have their hand in it. This is The Last Word. I'm Michael Lawson, along with Thomas Fortenberry. This is The Last Word in everything. We will bring you all those politicians that are fit to be heard. It's not fit to be heard. If they're liars, they will not be on this show.
Well, then we might actually lose half the show, Mike.
So, what can I say? If we lose half the show, then we have lost half the politicians. Well, I'm telling you, as Francis Fitzgerald said, there are no second acts in American life. Has Romney now have a second act?
I don't know. He actually...
Or is it just a one-act play with him?
Well, I was dead sure it's a one-act play that they didn't even pay taxes on. But this week, he actually managed for the first time to do something well. And that was, he gave a good speech. He stood up, and he didn't fumble. That's all he had to do. And he actually did that.
Well,
let's give him props on that. He just didn't do his usual mouth Olympics. So I'll give him that part.
Well, I see you're being kind.
I am.
I said he did fumble. I don't care what they're all saying. The man, if you were born yesterday or just fell off a potato truck, then he did a good job.
Right.
But the man, I'm surprised he even admitted his name was Mitt Romney. You know, he didn't say was Mitt Romney, you know.
That's true. That's true.
So the man lied.
Isn't even Mitt.
You know, it's just like my father used to say when we were growing up, my brother and I. He said, look, he can't stand a liar. He said, you could be a bank robber, a murderer. If you're a liar,
got no honor.
Got no honor. This man and my brother and I, my father said, if you lie to me, I am going to beat you with this belt till the cows come home. I got one beating. My brother would lie if the sun came out. My father would come home. He said, what day is it? Tuesday. Must be time for Dennis to get a beating. Because I know he lied sometime today. Mitt Romney lies just to lie.
Yeah, just to hear the sound of his own voice.
There wasn't one, not one single thing, not one single thing that he told the truth about. Not one single thing. He didn't even give his full name. He said, Mitt Romney, it's Willard Mitt Romney. So you see, the man, you talk about Etch-a-Sketch. He broke the Etch-a-Sketcher.
Yeah.
He, everything that he said. You know, that reminds me of the film A Few Good Men. Lee J. Cobb, who's dead now, well, they're all dead now, but Lee J. Cobb, fine character actor. He played the person who was the racist in the group of men. Ray doesn't know about Few Good Men, one of the finest films ever made. Talking about the black and white version with Henry Fonda. Anyway, they're jurors and they're trying to decide whether somebody should be put to death or not. And he lies so much that he doesn't even know what he's doing. And he's just a juror. And he says, I don't care what y'all are saying. He's one of them. He's lying.
Right.
So the thing is that Mitt Romney came into that debate. Yeah, he was on acid or something because he was all hyped up. He's never been like that before. So, I mean, even the president said yesterday, he says, who the heck was that masked man? Who was that masked man? Well, the thing is that he was just a little more exuberant. But he moved everything that he said during the debates. He moved completely to the left. He is now
for
regulations of Wall Street. He is now for the kids staying on your parents' insurance till 26.
Yeah.
He's now for, you know, he's in the pocket of the teachers. He wants a teacher in every school, in every household. He wants a teacher everywhere. We can't do nothing without good teachers. And he was just saying 3 months ago, oh, the president wants to, for us to pay more money. And didn't he get the word that we do not want any more government in our states? He wanted to get rid of the teachers. He wanted to get rid of the firemen. He wants to get rid of all the city workers because he wants it privatized.
Yeah. I mean, look, we've been talking about this for years. This is the old line going all the way back to our good boy, Dick Cheney. Even the 1970s, they first proposed. They had all their white papers out and everything else that said the government was the largest source of untapped income and that they could go in and privatize every segment of it and make immense fortunes. And they actually set about doing so, and they've done a fairly good job. One of the most egregious ones, in my opinion, is that they privatized their military to a large extent.
And it's almost like Star Troopers.
Well, yeah,
Starship Troopers.
Except that you know, it's not funny when it's reality, but it is what they're doing. They turned it into corporate. You know, now we've got Blackwater Wars and stuff like that. We had more contractors overseas than we had soldiers. And we've turned over the running of everything, every base, you know, every faucet, every light switch, everything else, instead of our military and our military technicians and support groups doing this stuff. It's private corporations, everything for profit. And that's their vision. So this is Mitt, you know, just he's been championing that. He is the poster boy for corporate greed and power. And he wanted to do that. But now suddenly in the debate, hey, he's every teacher's friend.
Oh,
he's every parent's friend. He's every student's friend.
We don't want pizza. We want filet mignon for lunch for the kids. I mean, you know, if they don't get it in schools, forget. You know, I want you to hear something about how much his health care plan is.
Let me ask you a couple of specific areas on health care. You say that you would rescind the president's health care plan on day one. Does that mean that you're prepared to say to Americans, young adults and those with pre-existing conditions, that they would no longer be guaranteed health care?
Well, of course not. I say we're going to replace Obamacare, and I'm replacing it with my own plan. And, you know, even in Massachusetts, where I was governor, our plan there deals with pre-existing conditions and with young people.
So you keep
everybody,
that as part of the federal plan?
Well, I'm not getting rid of all of health care reform. Of course, there are a number of things that I like in health care reform that I'm going to put in place. One is to make sure that those with pre-existing conditions can get coverage.
Now, that was said in an interview with David Gregory. What has he said about Obamacare? He will get rid of it on the first day.
Hey, that's been their main ad campaign.
Well,
they've been running these ads
Am I in the Matrix? Have I been dreaming this? What's the story? Now he's for Obamacare?
And in that same sentence, did you hear him? I will rescind Obamacare.
Rescind. He didn't
get
rid of
period.
He used another term, rescind.
But he said, I will rescind Obamacare, and then, period, next sentence. Well, I didn't say I'd get rid of all the parts. I was just going to, you know, you can't rescind something and keep something. You know, you can't. And then he said, well, I might replace it. Replace Obamacare, and I don't like that term, by the way.
Well,
it's the Affordable Care Act. But anyway,
because Obama cares.
Yeah, he does care. But the Affordable Care Act took about 40 years before it was passed. Let me check my calendar on if you rescind something on
50,
day one.
Because I think
they've honestly been working
right
on it since World War II. So you know, we're getting into the, like, you know,
that's right,
70-year mark coming up. You know, but anyway, we have a guy who is saying that he's going to get rid of it, but yet keep it somehow, and or replace it with his own.
No, you mean the one in Massachusetts?
The one he doesn't.
He didn't admit it.
Yeah, he didn't admit it. You know, it was verbatim the same, but he said he's going to replace it with something different. To replace anything, I mean, if we just take that as a model, even cut it in half, giving credit that he gets it ramrodded right through there, you're talking 20 years out before you have care in America again.
Oh well, but he said that he is going to keep certain parts of it, like the 26-year-olds staying on your family health care plan. He's going to keep that. The only problem is with that is that it takes a mandate. And he said he does not like the mandate. So if he doesn't like the mandate, if you can't force people to be a part of it, that's the whole thing that makes the Affordable Care Act work, is having a mandate that if people do not buy into this program,
right,
they are going to pay X amount of dollars at the end of the year.
This is why, though, we said early on, if they don't have a single-payer system, what the Democrats wanted, then you're left with the Republican option. The Republican option was
suicide.
No.
Oh, no?
Yeah, that was, yeah. Just don't.
Just die.
Yeah.
Just die.
Never get sick, and if you do, die.
Right. Die early.
But no, they're the ones who came up with the you must pay. You know, you must participate.
Right.
You must mandatorily pay. That was their addition.
This was by the Heritage Foundation.
This was something that they came up with, and this was the compromise.
You know the Heritage Foundation?
Yeah.
The ultra-conservative corporate arm of the Conservative Party.
Yeah, but so this was something that they came up with, their own rebuttal, so that they will compare. You remember?
That's right.
We don't want that Democratic idea. Let's go with ours.
Right.
That was the compromise.
Right.
That's what he signed on. He said, okay, I give you your part, you give me my part. Bingo.
But that's what makes
and now they're saying
a Democratic and Republican Party compromise.
This is the funny thing. They are now attacking him for using their plan, their compromise.
Well, but they're denying. You haven't heard Heritage Foundation say, it's our plan.
That's amazing.
You haven't heard anybody saying that. Well, you know, I need to tell everybody, this is the first day of our new hours. We will be on for 3 hours today. Because there were so many people that say, hey, you got to go on. You
got
to go on longer.
There's too much stuff people trying to call in.
Absolutely.
Trying to get in.
So, hey, you know, you want to call in 646-716-5242. 646-716-5242.
Well, here's the good news.
Good news.
The good news about this week with this debate, which I'm telling you, I was a bit saddened.
Yes, he talked to me. And
by
I told
Barack
you,
Obama.
Hey.
Now, look, I've seen the man for years. Absolutely love him. He's a brilliant guy. But I thought this was one of his weaker performances ever. I don't know why. He usually knocks it out of the park and across the county line. And I could not believe that it was a – and this is the sad part. It was a medium performance, you know. But for him, that's a failure. It was a good performance, but it wasn't great, okay? And it reflected that in the polls. I think a lot of people, you see all these things, you know, saying 22% more people give it to Romney or whatever. But the good news about this whole thing is everybody's watching, everybody's listening, and everybody's talking
people.
About it. 60
but what are they talking about? They're talking about
the
killing Big Bird. That's what they, you know, every one of these debates, there's nothing you remember about them. You remember the classic lines. You remember the, I know Jack Kennedy, and you know Jack Kennedy.
Right.
You remember, there you go again. You remember, what am I doing here? I didn't know why I'm here. You don't remember what went on during the debate. They will remember, I want to get rid of Big Bird. I like you, Jim Lehrer, but I'm going to get rid of PBS. Mm-hmm. Let me give you a statistic. Getting rid of PBS, you know that deficit clock?
Yeah.
1 minute of the deficit clock is worth getting rid of PBS.
I don't even think it'd make a minute, Mike, to be honest. PBS has a minuscule.
They
all the NPR,
90,
PBS, all of
I believe it's 95% of their 97% of their budget comes from private entities.
Yes, they have.
This is just like killing the what's the program the the one they got rid of with the on home care. Not home care, health care. I'll get back to you. But anyway,
there's so many they want to cut, Mike. I can't.
There's so much they want to cut. But Big Bird is not the one that you need to go after. Because I'll tell you, those Muppets are rough.
Yeah.
When they come after you, they're going to need more than the Secret Service to protect them.
That's the truth.
I'm telling you. Big Bird was at his rally just today, you know. Anyway. Yeah,
that's why I want those two. You remember those two old critics used to sit up in the box?
Right. And there are no second acts. As Francis Key Fitzgerald said, there are no second acts. Now, let me give you some information here about the Mr. Willard, as Reverend Al says, Willard Mitt Romney. Let me tell you about Romney's plan that would cost nearly 2 million jobs. He says he is going to, if he gets elected, there'll be 12 million jobs elected in this force for 4 years. Well, you know, they didn't figure it out. That wasn't Ryan that figured it out. You know who figured it out? The Congressional Budget Office. They have said that in 4 years, going the way we're going now,
you mean under
right
that
now,
evil communist
under the evil communist Muslim dictator President Obama, with him, there will be 12 million jobs created in the next 4 years. So it wasn't even his idea. He stole that.
Well, you know, even that statement alone, what that says is jobs occur, just like population.
Duh.
So the more population,
like they,
the more jobs.
They occur.
Everything,
if you get dead.
And the economy always grows at a certain rate.
Absolutely.
And naturally growing at a certain rate, if he does nothing, if he shows up and like walks through the front door, he gets 12 million jobs.
Now,
or whatever. So that's like what? That's like saying nothing.
Nope. I'd like $4 million. That's a little less than $3 million a year. Okay, about $3 million a year. Now,
I guess his claim to fame on that though is that he won't completely destroy the economy.
Oh,
like
yes.
His predecessor Bush, where they lose that many every few minutes.
Well, you're telling me that
maybe that's how Romney's trying to differentiate himself. He's I won't cause another depression. Maybe that's his
no,
claim to fame.
Not. I won't cause another depression if I have to. Let me just play this.
From a Romney campaign fundraiser, the candidate divides the country between those who pay federal income tax and those who do not. But it is not that simple. More than a quarter of Americans do not pay federal income tax, but still pay payroll taxes. In fact, according to the Tax Policy Center, only 18.1% of Americans pay zero federal income tax and zero federal payroll tax. But to Governor Romney's point, who are the 47% who don't pay federal income tax? 44% are elderly Americans who get tax credits. 30% are the working poor or those who get tax credits for their children. A little over 5% are students who get credits for school. And guess who else doesn't pay federal income tax? 3,000 high-income earners who brought in more than $2 million, but through deductions, paid no federal income tax at all.
Now, we're going to go into this, but just to give you a little... Or she said 2 million, right?
Right?
Well, paying more, let's put it this way. The president was saying the upper 1%, that's those people.
Mm-hmm.
But listen, 3% who pay between $200,000 and $500,000 pay only 3.5%.
Oh, really?
That's all. 3.5%. The ones above $1 million pay less than 1%. See, and then he says, 47% don't pay tax at all. That is garbage. That's federal taxes. So
right.
They are very loose with these words here.
Well, yeah.
Because I am lower than that. You're lower than that. I pay sales tax. I pay federal tax. I pay gasoline tax. I pay food tax. I pay clothing tax. I pay property tax.
Right.
Payroll tax.
Every time you move, drink, breathe, drive.
What are we talking about here? You don't pay taxes. So They lie every time they say that. Now, getting back to, we're going to get back to that, but getting back to the midst of here.
You got to understand, though, about this tax thing for a second. The GOP, you know, to a large part right now, are dominated by this Tea Party faction. And the Tea Party faction, to a large part, is dominated by the whole we hate everything in the government, Ron Paul, we shouldn't even have a federal tax system. We shouldn't even have banks or anything. They I don't know what they're they're the ones that want to dissolve the Federal Reserve.
Right.
They're the ones that want to, they see us all evil empire, you know, whatever. So to placate them or whatever is, I mean, this is a guy who is running to be their president, and they don't want any taxes. They don't believe in taxes. They don't believe in any personal responsibility at all. Just it's whatever you get, and you keep what you get.
If that's the case, the Nazis would be running this country.
Because
we wouldn't even have an army.
and
want to pay them.
Exactly. That's what I don't understand, their whole logic, because their logic is some kind of a, you know, devolution back to, I don't know what, the states. A whole bunch of independent states that are fighting each other.
If you can't put something on a credit card, you can't produce a Star Wars that Ronald Reagan wanted.
Right.
If you can't produce that and can't scare the Russians, we would be under Russian domination today.
Right.
I mean, that is complete, absolute nonsense.
I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, if you want to give Reagan credit for that, he outspent the Soviet Union.
He spent it to the ground.
Until he broke them.
And he did pay for it.
Right. And we're still paying for that today.
I was saying that it was tripled. And I'm going to go into it in a commentary I make. He tripled the debt in the first term of his presidency.
Right.
I mean, it's completely outrageous. And he said that, now here's the mister. He said, the New York Times confirmed that Romney and his federal elite investors are able to increase their fortune in ways unavailable to most taxpayers to avoid actually paying taxes. Perhaps more significant was that Romney's offshore investments had been on the profit side of the ledger, in the way Bain's tax avoidance strategies have enhanced his income. Some of the offshore entitlements enable Bain-owned companies to sidestep certain taxes, increasing returns for Mr. Romney and other investors. Others help Bain attract foreign investors and nonprofit institutions by insulating the investor from taxes, augmenting Mr. Romney's bottom line, since he shared in management fees based on the size of Bain's fund.
So it's all just an endless shell game of hiding and evading and not paying your share.
That's it.
You know, you can make $100 million profit, but you know what? You owe the government that you made the $100 million profit in a little bit of that to help the next person.
Now, there is a major problem here. We're talking about the 47% that he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
47%.
47% of the filers will pay no federal income tax for 2009, 2011. Okay? Now, federal income tax. Federal. We're not talking about any tax.
Because, you know, for a long time, you know, we've been debating this. Let's go to a flat tax. Let's go to a fair tax. Let's say all these, you know, code words, right? And for a long time, they've been saying we should do away
no
with
tax.
Taxes on them and just let, you know, all those regular people pay sales tax and
right.
stuff like that. Well, you know, who buys regular stuff at the regular store on the corner? That's all of those, what do they call it again? 47% of Americans, you know, all those poor people.
All those poor people
in real neighborhoods.
Absolutely correct.
And go to real stores.
Now
they can't, you know, fly around on their Sununu jet and get a
now here's the thing: the people who don't pay no income tax, less than $10,000, 99.9 99.8% of the people who make less than $10,000 pay no federal income tax. But those people making less than $10,000 are still paying taxes on gasoline, on cigarettes,
on
soda, on their food, on their clothes, on if they own a car, on their registration.
Right.
They're not getting away with not paying any tax.
Right.
10 to 20,000 people who make the $10,000 to $20,000, they pay, that's about 83.6% of those people.
Yeah.
People who make $20,000 to $30,000, it's 61%. Those making $30,000 to $40,000 pay 47%. Now that must be the people he's talking about, because he said 47%, right?
Yeah.
But they're only making between $30,000 and $40,000. That's before taxes.
Mm-hmm.
They're making so now after they're paying taxes, I mean, what are we talking about? They're making, okay? So now, $40,000 to $50,000 pays 35%. $50,000 to $75,000 pay 21.5%. $75,000 to $100,000 pay 9.2%. $100,000 to $200,000 pay 3.5%. Is there a? I mean, sorry, 9.2%. Is there a major drop between you earning $50,000 to $75,000 and $75,000 to $100,000? Is there a major drop there? I mean, what are we talking about? Almost 11% drop.
Yep.
And between $75,000 and $100,000 and earning $1 million, it drops another 10% to 0 to 1.8%, which is really 0%. So what are we talking about here?
And there's another one that drives me nuts in the no tax debate. I mean, their endless assault on government services, one of the taxes we pay. Social Security tax.
Social Security tax.
They always
and that's based on what you earn.
Yeah. And it's your money. And guess what? Built that way, always will be that way. It's solvent. It pays for itself.
It pays
for
itself.
You put in and you get out what you put in.
Well, they say, oh, there's less people working, so therefore it's going to go down. No.
It's always been solvent. It's what you pay in.
So what's that word?
It's one to one.
They're saying, well, there's going to be less people working, so therefore there's going to be less money in Social Security.
No.
There ain't less people working. If you don't work,
And everybody that has half a brain.
But they're saying, we're living longer.
No. The only reason that there's any issue at all, Social Security,
is because
they went and borrowed the money.
Stole the money from Social Security. They stole the money.
So
we put a note in
there. It was set up as 100% solvent. It pays for itself. You pay in, you get out. It's 1-to-1 ratio. There's nothing to it. But they pretend it's a tax, some federal subsidy.
Right.
Freeloaders.
Oh, please. We're going to get a subsidy.
So they pretend it's that. They pretend it's going bankrupt because of all the freeloaders that are living longer.
Yeah, all you freeloaders that won't just hurry up and die.
Because they do what they always do. Just like when they went in and found a big, happy Clinton surplus sitting in the bank.
Oh, look at all that money.
They went, why leave this money sitting around here?
Why is that all that money sitting around here?
You can put it right in our pockets and go spend that stuff. And that's what they do. So they took the Social Security money out, and then they say, hey, we need to abolish that system. It's going broke. But this is the games they play when they start talking about how no one pays taxes. And if you're paying taxes, they're evil.
Oh,
that's
a
wonderful loader system.
Here's what Ronnie said about the 47%, in case you haven't heard it before, in case you've been sleeping under a rock or something. Romney said in this video that was taped, in which he disparaged 47% of the voters as dependent on government.
And if you don't understand that statement, that's basically half of all of our patriotic, freedom-loving citizens of the United States of America, he just threw in the trash can. But anyway, go ahead. The Patriots.
On the videotape, Romney said
47%.
47% of the people
are worthless.
Romney said, this is at a Florida fundraiser, a private fundraiser, $50,000 a plate.
Hey, because everybody can afford that.
Oh, of course. I was looking. Why? I don't know why I didn't get an invitation. I could have went right down it.
Well, have you seen the broccoli? Oh, my God, it was so green.
It was? Oh, my God. Romney said at a Florida fundraiser that 47% of the voters who were dependent on government and unlikely to support him in their November 6th election. He said they were dependent. All they care about is where their food is coming from, among other things. I don't understand being upset about that.
These buzzwords, dependent.
Dependent.
They're dependent. You know what? My grandparents were dependent on Social Security.
Oh.
They were dependent on, Medicare. They go through life working, and they were dependent on the soldiers that kept America safe. They were dependent on the firemen that kept the cities from burning down. They were dependent on the policemen that kept them from being robbed.
Hmm.
Right?
Dependents. They were dependent. Well, let me tell you about the Tax Policy Center, which is a non-political organization. But of course, the Tea Party and the Regressive Party doesn't believe that, only if it's something that they want to quote for them. The Policy Center is a well-regulated think tank. And it calculated that the 40% of Americans who owe no federal income taxes, up from the usual 38%, who typically owe no federal income taxes, federal income taxes, we're not saying taxes, on April 15th, most still pay Social Security taxes, Medicare taxes, sales taxes, property taxes if they own a house, but if they own a car, they're paying it.
Dependents.
These people pay no income, federal income taxes, aren't freeloaders or evaders. Virtually all are simply doing what the law allows. Now, didn't Mitt Romney, the mister, say, I only pay enough taxes of what the law allows,
right,
and not a penny more,
yeah,
and if I did, I shouldn't be president?
Right.
We'll get back to that, too.
There's a term we should all learn, finagle.
Right. There are so many of them, and we're talking about here, there are so many of them. This is a result of decades of deliberate bipartisan tax policy. Okay, these people... the appropriately progressive income tax that levies a heavier burden on better-off taxpayers and little or none of those with the smallest incomes. It includes tax credits, such as the ones that reward people for having children, and will help lift some people above the party line by rewarding them for working. And it includes President George W. Bush's tax cuts, which removed 5 million people from the tax rolls while giving big cuts to upper-income people as well. Most people owe no income tax this year because of the recession has caused many people to lose jobs and tax cuts in the Stimulus Act. And an idea conservatives preferred to spending programs. Remember, this was their job. They wanted this stimulus.
Are you saying that the Bush tax plan created 5 million new freeloaders?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
That's what they did.
They removed
5 million new freeloaders.
That was a Republican. Let me
that's right.
Okay, I'm sorry.
As I was saying, it includes tax credits such as the ones that reward people for having children and help lift some people above the poverty line by rewarding them for working. It also includes President George W. Bush tax cuts, which removed 5 million people from the tax rolls while giving big cuts to upper income people. That was the stimulus plan. He created the stimulus plan.
Because you know their whole stimulus plan is stimulate the wealthy and let us trickle down on the poor.
Well,
that's how they stimulate themselves.
Well, he also had to create the stimulus plan because if he didn't, he might have been in jail before he got out of office. most people owe no income tax year because recession has caused many more people their jobs and tax cuts. Okay, no, I read that. Even that number, however, strikes us as too high. It is not healthy for society if someone between a third and a half of all potential tax filters doesn't help share the cost of most government. From defense to the highways to national parks, everyone above the poverty level should have at least a minimal stake in financing the nation. The fact that so many people have no income liability is a reflection of a leaky, dysfunctional tax system. The code is abruptly complex, absurdly complex.
That's true.
And it's
you can't fill it full of all those loopholes for corporations.
That's right. It's riddled with loopholes and excessive social engineering. It's undermined by spending programs that masquerade as tax cuts. It even fails in its basic function of raising revenue, taking in barely $1 for every $2 that the government spends. Now, here's the thing. The stimulus always takes in more money than what a spending program does. So that's the reason why a stimulus was created in the first place. See, but they keep knocking stimulus. Now, we'll give you some facts here.
I want to share something with you real quick.
Yes.
Because when we're talking about all this, it's always their way of saying things, their way of implying things. You know, like, for instance, dependents or freeloaders or whatever. You know, they always imply, like, so negative. You know, just like when they talk about the president, he's never the president of the United States, like an honorary title. It's always that you know, thug that got in there,
right,
snuck in the middle of the night. But you were saying earlier about Mitt, about during the debate, you know, he stood up there in his big forthright way, and he just blathered on lie after lie after lie, but with utter conviction. So people are like going, wow, he really dominated that debate. He really made the difference. He's really saying something, right? You know that etch-a-sketch and joke we've been talking about on that? Well, so here's one. André Gide. French writer.
Yes.
Nobel Prize laureate in literature. I mean, smart guy. Someone who actually knew, you know. But guy was born back in the 1800s, lived through both world wars. So he saw a little bit, experienced a little bit. But one of the things he said is that he couldn't stand hypocrites. And he said the secret to the true hypocrite is this. True hypocrites are ones who cease to perceive their own deceptions. They're ones who lie with sincerity. And that's something that my father used to say. He said, when you get, you know, people lie, and you can just, you know, kiss people and lie, oh, you know they're lying, right? But liars don't lie. Liars just deceive themselves, like, all day long. They believe everything they're saying, but they'll say anything. And he used to tell me that's the difference. He said that's why some politicians, some salesmen, some everything else, and all that, you cannot catch them. You know, you can't flush them out. You can't rattle them or whatever, because they are a lie. Everything is a lie. That's all they do. It's sincerity.
Well,
but that's what I'm saying, the hypocrite. The hypocrite doesn't even know his own deception.
Well, you know,
he's honest about this 5 minutes, and 5 minutes from now, I'll tell you something else.
That's right. And the thing is that the story, you remember Death of a Salesman?
Uh-huh.
his job was to sell these, I think it was full of brush or vacuum cleaners, I don't remember what it was. But anyway, he went out and he just couldn't sell anymore because people were just wanting to go for the okey-doke. The thing is that as a salesperson, so when I worked on Wall Street, I know how these guys do.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is about closing.
Yeah.
If you get in the room with the person, you are 60% there. 60% there closing the deal.
Yep.
And you don't let, you know, it's just like you go down to these oh, hey, you want a free trip to the Bahamas? You want a free trip to Bahamas? Just come down to this 90-minute lecture on the speech.
Which
and you got it. You know,
town hall on the beach.
When you get there, they are hard tying you, tying you to the chair. They say, "What do you mean you're not going to buy this? Are you kidding me?" After they're so nice and polite the whole time. Oh yes, we'll do this, and you can go that, and you can here's my home, my personal number. You can call me now. What do you want to sign? Well, then you, what do you mean you're not interested? What? You kidding me? I mean, they practically threaten you.
Yep.
But this is how
they're spending so much money on all that free stuff.
And if you notice, a salesman will use any single tactic at their mercy to close the deal.
Yeah.
Great film. Glengarry, Glenn Ross.
Hey, one of my all-time favorites. I'll just fix it. Whoa. When you talk about closing the deal.
He says, I'll never forget the deal. And I believe it was Alec Baldwin.
Alec Baldwin.
The,
hey, this one.
Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor.
I'm not an Alec Baldwin fan.
It is what I am.
In general.
Is,
that movie, though,
is,
his role was unbelievable.
I mean, when one of the salesmen, if people haven't seen it, you've got to rent this film. The first 15 minutes of the movie is the entire film. You know what it takes. I was a salesman once. It was on Wall Street, but I want to tell you, this is how it's done. One of the salesmen gets up. They have the head salesman
always
from,
be close.
From downtown, from I forgot the name of the firm. And he said, "Who's this guy?" He says, so he gets up and he goes to get some coffee. He says, "Where are you going?"
Yeah.
He said, "I'm going to get some coffee." Coffee is for closes. I mean, this is how it is. Mitt Romney was in there at that debate, and he was going to close because he was told. He was told. Can you play that part? See if that part's on there.
Yeah, I could play.
The thing was that he was told that if he didn't close the deal, in this debate, he was finished.
He was finished. That's right.
He was finished.
That's one thing that HuffPost said today. One of the most accurate statements that I heard was that the success of Romney's performance was that he silenced the GOP critics. That's what he had to do.
He had to do
he
that.
He did it.
He was
so,
finished. So
you know,
the thing
he stood
is,
out there and delivered that.
The president didn't have to close no deal.
No.
He's the president.
He's the president.
What deal will I have to close? I'm the president.
Yeah,
you know, when you go in to take the fight from the heavyweight champion of the world, you don't go in there and win on a tie. You need to knock him out.
Yep.
Now, some people say, "Oh, yeah, but he shouldn't have played defense. You know, you play defense and you lose the game." That's football. That's basketball. That ain't politics. Because when you're forced to make moves that you don't ordinarily make, you make mistakes. Mitt Romney has gone completely away from his game plan where he was ultra-conservative. He has now moved to the center, and believe me, there's a lot of things that were said in that debate that his base is curling their feet over.
Yeah.
He now... And see, the one thing that the president now sees, he has now peeped his whole card.
Yeah.
They know how he's going to go. And there are two other debates.
And like you said last night on the phone, he really
he has nowhere to go.
He has put it on the record in front of the entire American people.
Put a 60 million people down.
No, I said 67 million.
Right. There's 67 million people.
67 million people just witnessed him say ABCD.
Absolutely.
Now we got it on record. It's not five people at his little private fundraiser.
No, not five people or 15 people at a fundraiser.
So,
we said something off the wall.
Yeah. So
67
now,
million people heard.
He's locked in.
He's locked in now.
And unfortunately, he's locked in saying, I support everything Obama does, but I'll do it different.
Right.
What? What's that mean?
What does that mean? You'll do it different? Well, how do we know your difference will make it work? Oh, because I've been in private industry. He is not. See, that's such a fallacy. Bain Capital is not like your local grocery store.
Right.
It is not private industry.
It is not like Macy's.
The whole idea of Bain Capital was to make money for your corporation, not for anybody else. They didn't go in there to make sure this company made money. They went in there to make sure that Bain Capital made money.
I got an analogy for you. Let's just follow this for a minute.
Right.
At one time in history, there was a land of opportunity opened up. And some, we'll just use the current pejorative, Hispanics. But there were some Spanish guys that went over and seized the opportunity. They took some money. We'll call it gold. They took some gold, stuffed their boats with it, and sailed back home and said, looky, looky what we found. Profit, profit, profit. Okay? That's a kind of a business, in a way. Well, then there were some other people that had some boats, didn't have any money. But they said, hey, you know what? We have to sail all the way across the world and go do some work in some mines and get some gold and bring it back. That's a lot of work. But you know what we could do? We could meet that boat right out there in the bay
and
just take all the gold right off of it. And not to Sir Francis Drake it or anything.
Oh,
but
no.
I'm just saying that every once in a while there's a pirate capitalist for every capitalist. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And that might be
Bain Capital.
What? Arg. No, you matey, I'm not saying that.
Well,
they would steal profits from companies that had profits? What?
There was a great thing which I need to play that I thought was the most unbelievable thing that one of the greatest hosts on TV, Lawrence O'Donnell, said last night about the matador and the bullfighter.
Happened last night. The news media, Reuters poll showed us that basically nothing happened. That today, in a poll taken today, that President Obama has gone up 1 point from 47 to 48. Mitt Romney's gone up 2 from 41 to 43. That's movement within the margin of error. It means absolutely nothing. The Denver Post headline today uses a sports analogy, uses a boxing analogy, round one. John Ingold, who wrote the Denver Post front page story, switches to another sport, if we can call bullfighting a sport, in the first paragraph of his article. It's really, really perfect. Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney rhetorically charged at President Barack Obama in their first presidential debate at the University of Denver on Wednesday. In a clash that was notable for Romney's aggressiveness and Obama's reluctance to engage in a direct fight. Here's the great part. Like a bull to a matador, Romney time and again turned toward Obama to deliver attacks on the president's job performance, portraying him as clueless to his policy's impacts and hopeless in trying to turn the economy around. Like a bull to a matador, Romney time and again turned toward Obama to deliver attacks. Like a bull to a matador. And what does a matador do to the bull in the end?
Gee, what does the matador do to the bull in the end?
I think it just goes, and it just goes off, right?
Right. Well, you see, the thing is, as I was saying before, Obama was the matador. Mm-hmm. Romney is the bull. Now, the bull sold, as Romney did, all the theory and the... Okay, we're back up. We had a drop in signal there. We don't know what happened. I hope everybody is still there. We're back up.
Yeah, occasionally the satellite winks at us or something.
Oh, well. But as we were talking, I hope everybody's still there. As we were talking, we...
So we just got finished with a bullfight.
A bullfight.
The
matador.
Just make sure that after the fight, what I'm worried about is after that debate, everybody walks off stage, camera goes off. Got to watch where you walk. So there might be some leavings from the bull, is all I'm saying. Might be all over the place.
When those swords go into the bull, there's a plenty of leavings. And
well, look, I think we can leave this debate for now. We'll talk about it some more.
I have some more things about the Mitzvah here that I need to talk about.
Oh, more?
And
what?
Yes, more stuff about the minister. These are some of the things that he said about Obama.
Mm-hmm.
He said Obama is cutting $716 billion for Medicare. This is an utter lie. Is that now, this is the same thing that our congressman in North Carolina, one of our congressmen, Larry Kissel, said. And I was the first vice chair for the 8th Congressional District, and I told Larry Kissel this was a lie. And Larry Kissel is going off to the dark side now. He is no longer
He's a Sith Lord now.
So. A Sith Lord, yes, you're absolutely correct.
So here's the thing about that always bothers me. He always frames it as he's stealing the money from the recipients. You know, he's taking that money. Well, he won. All he did was take away the insurers' payouts.
No. What he is doing, actually,
because it's a corporate.
He found money that these insurance companies. This only affects the hospitals,
and
the insurance companies. There is $716 billion. Not one dime of that came out of a recipient's benefits.
Right.
Not one dime. And when he talks about that it's coming out.
But this is superfluous money that they've taken and redirecting back into the actual programs. They're taking away from the insurers.
Right.
Because they were paying companies.
Well, and that's the reason why. And that's the reason why that these insurance companies, they didn't have to. When you paid, let's take the insurance company and not talk about Medicare right now. Right. The insurance company, when you have health care, you pay your premium. Well, we're talking about the federal government getting in the way, the bureaucrat getting in the way of your insurance companies. That's an outright lie. I go to the doctor. I never saw a federal government worker standing there saying, oh, let me look over you and see what kind of help you're getting here.
Right.
It's the insurance companies that do that.
Right.
And the insurance companies, through the whole year, how many times did you go to the doctor?
Mm-hmm.
How many premiums did you pay?
Yeah. Have you ever had a pre-existing freckle?
Right. So the problem is that they now, under the Affordable Care Act, Obama, who cares, they have to spend 80% of the premiums that you give them on your health care. And if they don't, they have to reimburse the rest back to you.
So, again, this is a boon for recipients. This isn't a
well, I know people that have already gotten reimbursement starting in August started.
So what this is, again, the way Romney phrases it is he's taking money out of Medicare. The truth is He's taking the money that they would just absorb.
Absolutely.
And redirecting it back to the people.
Right.
So it's actually paying the people.
It reduces the growth of Medicare spending over 10 years, primarily in what's paid to hospitals and insurers. And the problem is that they don't want that.
Of course not.
The hospitals want to be able to charge you $1 billion for a piece of cough drop.
And besides, why would you want to reimburse money back to those 47%?
The 47%, right.
47%
don't pay
the freeloaders.
Right, the freeloaders, right.
Right.
Why would you want
to
do that?
You just give money to them for no reason.
So the thing is, now, the other thing is that here's what the Romney plan calls for.
Mm-hmm.
A $5 trillion tax cut. Oh, didn't you remember him saying, oh, no, I don't have any tax cut. I don't have $5 trillion. Well, where'd you get that from? Well, here's what it is. Remember him saying that he wants to cut across the board 20%?
Right.
Well, that's where it's coming from. But before we get off that, we have a gentleman here that has an important message to hear.
We have to. Hey, welcome back,
sir. We have Cool Charlie here, who has a message for all those that are listening out here. Cool Charlie, glad to see you.
Well, good to see you again, too, and glad to be back again here at Reddit 28th. And just a little something about Reddit 28th. Very shortly, we're going to have an evening of romantic jazz up here for, you know, for the mature crowd, nice
low
feed.
Me?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes, and me, too.
My wife doesn't say that. She says I'm not mature sometimes.
Well, I think a lot of us sometimes are not mature. We want to be mature. But I think this would be a nice evening. That'll start somewhere in the neighborhood about 7 o'clock, the end of October. Now the 29th of October, on a Wednesday evening only. And we're going to see how this works out and do it for 3 consecutive Wednesdays. I think it'll do well. And, of course, we'll have a little bit of a snack or an hors d'oeuvre for you there. There will be a slight charge, but it'll be a very small charge, just to pay for the entertainment. And some of these entertainers are worldwide gentlemen and ladies who have traveled all over Europe, Japan, and a variety of other places. So you're going to be getting yourself some top-notch type of romantic jazz on these evenings.
And is there any special dress code? I mean, how you want
to... You know, we want you to be as casual as possible.
As casual as
well. However you feel comfortable.
No pajamas, though.
Not this time.
Okay, good.
Maybe in the future we might consider that,
okay.
But not right now, I don't think. You know, if you want to wear a jacket, fine. If you want to wear a shirt and a tie, fine. If you want to just put on a sweater, fine. Whatever you feel comfortable with, we feel comfortable with you.
And you know, I know Jazz has got a nice bar back there, too, so it'll be...
He certainly does. This is a place where you can have yourself a slight drink, a mixed drink, if you like. And if you feel like you drink juice, we have that, too. And then we'll have someone not only to entertain you, but to take care of your needs while you're there. And like I said, the little snacks for those that are having a beer or something, at least, you know, come a little hungry.
Okay.
Eat your dinner, but come a little hungry.
And when is this going to be?
October the 29th is the date that we're looking for. I'm almost sure that's a confirmed date now. That'll be the first time. And we intend to do this for 3 consecutive weeks to see how it works out.
Very good.
And,
okay.
And the reason why it's done on Wednesdays is because people are looking for something to do other nights other than a Friday and Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to spend a lot of money either. So that's what we're thinking of. The mature crowd. If there's no age involved, if you're a mature person, come on by and spend some time with us.
Okay. Very good. And that's at Reddit 28, 2424 North Davidson.
That's it.
In Noda. Okay.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Okay. Yes, you did. Thank you. We have a...
Jazz back in here.
What's that?
Get some jazz.
Yeah, absolutely. Get some jazz back in there.
Amen.
Now...
Fantastic.
We were talking about the.
All right, take care.
We were talking about the.
A little bit of Romney, a little bit of.
Yeah, well, we had to get that in because he had to leave, so
yeah,
I didn't want to slice into what we were talking about. Because
so at the time, we had gotten on to...
Romney's saying it's $5
trillion
tax
cut.
I mean, now here, Romney flatly denied that he's proposing a $5 trillion tax cut. But he has proposed cutting all marginal tax rates at 20%, which would in itself cut revenues by $5 trillion. This is so unbelievable. Did he take math in school? I mean,
I just have to ask you, is our children learning?
Now, here's the thing.
Yeah.
How will he make up the difference of $5 trillion if he cuts it across the board?
And also, how do you preserve everything from teachers to...
Well, that's it.
$5 trillion.
He did say that he wants teachers. Now, before he said that the states shouldn't have that. We don't need teachers. We don't need firemen. Well, we need to cut everybody. No. We don't want any more bureaucrats working anywhere.
I don't want to remind you that the all the Republican governors that we've let in office, their example, the way they lead on cutting every job in sight and eliminating every predatory labor union they can find. I'm not quite sure how that matches up with the I love teachers slogan that he just rolled out.
Oh, absolutely. He said, Romney says he claims he will make it up through lost revenues, through ending unspecified tax deduction and closing unspecified loopholes.
Yeah.
But don't worry about it, because when I get in,
it all magically
I will tell you what they are. That I'm going to cut. Now, the other issue...
There's this curtain that he's borrowing from the Wizard of Oz.
Right. Don't look at the man behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
Romney would give millionaires another tax break and raise taxes on middle-class families by up to $2,000. Oh, no. He said that is not true. But this claim is based on a reputable analysis of Romney's...
Hey, they've been calling for this for a while, though. All of them have been. A, if you remember, Bush, he got his cut through by saying, oh, it's temporary, I swear. It only happened 1 year, and then we'll quit. And then they extended it and extended it and extended it, and now we're into, what, 12 years later?
You think?
So that never went away. And then ever since then, they've been calling for a new one. And a new round of tax cuts for wealthy people, because, again, the same argument was if we only give money to the rich, if we would only give them more breaks,
just give them some breaks,
just a little bit, if they're struggling so hard, but if only we'd give them a few more pennies on it, they could hire some people. They could get some jobs out there.
Oh, right.
Remember, because they're the only people that do anything.
At hire people at $1.50 an hour.
Well, you know, okay. Hire the freedom.
Well, we have
a
caller in here right now that I would like to get to, but we will get back to the mixer. Hello, caller. Who's this?
Hello, Michael. This is Althea Richardson-Tucker, running for district court judge in Union County.
How are you, Althea?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
And how's the race going for judge in Union County?
The race is going pretty well. I mean, we have been out there just beating the roads in terms of, you know, we're just rolling out the yard signs now, and that's been going fairly well. We've been going out talking to all the various church members around Union County. They're very excited that someone new and different is running for this particular position. So I'm quite excited about this race at this time.
And someone new and different. Yes, quite different, because there aren't any female black judges in Union County that I'm aware of, are there?
You are quite right. There is no female judges at all, and of course there's no African-American judges whatsoever. So that's quite interesting. And I just believe this is time that we, you know, we make a change here in Union County. There's, as you may very well know, there's like 51% of the population are women, and yet they're not being represented. Where's the voice when we have in Union County District Court, it's not just criminal law that we, the judges hear. We also hear a lot of family court issues that a lot of these issues impact upon women, whether or not it's custody, visitation rights, domestic violence, and so forth. And yet there's no woman on the bench, and we just believe that there should be a change regarding that.
Well, which district is it?
It's in District Judicial 20C, and that particular district makes up the area of, say, Waxhaw, Weddington, Indian Trail, a certain part of Matthews, and then, of course, a certain part of Monroe. There are some precincts in Monroe that are excluded from my district, of course. Some of them are precinct 3 and 4, 8, 9, 10, 13, 34, 36, and 42. And, you know, those are predominantly in Wingate, Marshall area, Marshville.
I think that right there should qualify.
So they knew just what. So I had to run in the district that I live in, and I have to call it as it is. This is a district that I'm running in.
Listen, can I just have you reiterate one thing that absolutely thrilled me? What I just heard. Now I'm not thrilled at all when you tell me that there is not a single female judge. That just blows my mind. But I love demographics. I love studying things. And when you, I absolutely agree with you. And I want you to repeat this because people don't even realize. But there has been a demographic shift in the last few years. Just as, you know, some of the news people hear about are things like, oh, there are more Hispanics and whatnot. But one of the biggest shifts that has occurred is that there are more women than men now. And a lot of people just simply aren't aware. They really, really aren't aware of it. But I want you to reiterate that, and then if you would, just kind of say, you know, in case there's some conglomerate out there lurking in the depths of the woods, why is it important to have a female voice on a bench?
A female voice, you know, gives another perspective. We're not saying that men are not, cannot make great decisions, because they do. But clearly there's room on the bench for a woman's voice. You talk about domestic violence, you know, it's not, one woman is not going to make all the decisions if she's on the bench, but clearly as judges, as we speak regarding cases, we can bring a different light so a judge could see things a little differently that they would not have normally seen it in a woman's perspective. And maybe the next time around they see a case similar, they may look at it in a different way. Judge Ginsburg said it much better than I do in a case, and I don't have the name of the case, but it was a case in which it was a juvenile case in which the school basically had searched this young lady, and her parents, you know, charged them, you know, filed for discrimination in which they felt as if the search and seizure was clearly a violation of her human rights, civil rights rather. And the judges, she said, Judge Ginsburg says, the judges did not believe that this 13-year-old girl was violated in any form. She says, you don't understand 13-year-olds. They are so sensitive. And because she brought that into the framework while they were discussing that case, that's why they ruled that that was an unlawful search and seizure on a 13-year-old. So a woman's voice is very important in many of the decisions justices make, and that's just one example.
Well,
just to ask, was it Stafford United School District versus Reading, or is that a different case? With the Ginsburg.
The Ginsburg case, you know what it was?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I don't have that with me, and I it just came to my mind, and I'm sorry that I didn't have the site for that, but for that particular case.
It's United School District versus Reading, but there was a this one's one with strip searching people for drugs.
Right.
But anyway, perhaps that's a different case, but I'm just trying to Google that. Again, the compassion, though, that you bring and the understanding that you bring, like you said, that simple little bitty fact of being female and understanding a different perspective. And don't you think that's absolutely vital to a fair and balanced justice system? I mean, that's the whole point.
Yes, absolutely. It's to bring fairness and impartiality to the courtroom. And clearly when you have a woman's voice on the bench, it gives an appearance that, you know, the justices are being fair and impartial to the entire citizens, the constituents in that area. So if you were to even look at the woman of justice, she has a blindfold. She's blindfolded. And it just means that we need fair and impartiality in every part of our system, when it's in criminal law or it's coming before you on a custody visitation issue. One needs to be able to judge others in a very fair and impartial way, to be able to listen to the people and be patient and have, you know, and understand what they're saying and give them the, and allow them to be able to state their case in such a way that you can apply the facts and the law and bring a fair decision at all times. And clearly a woman being there will give an appearance that everyone is trying to be fair and impartial.
Well, is there something that a woman brings to the table when in the courtroom that is different than a man brings to the table? Now, we know the law is a law. You have to apply the law the same. But is there something in understanding the law or the way the law is carried out? Is it something that a woman brings that sometimes a man can't bring?
Well, it's, you know, we're taught, men or women, you know, regardless of our gender, we're clearly taught how to apply the facts of the law and try to render fair and fair decisions. However, you know, a woman, just like many of you know, your mothers, your sisters, we all come in different packages, clearly. And we know how to be compassionate at times and when to be very hard and rule in such a way that takes, you know, to let people understand that one is serious, that you have crossed the line, that there's no more favors to be done, but one must stick to, you know, to the law and apply it accordingly. And I think that's what we bring. We bring this nature of being able to know when to be compassionate and when to be able to rule in a very hard way because of the facts that comes before us. And I think that's the difference that we can have, because we have raised children in such a way that we are always doing that. It's always using using compassion and yet being very strict in terms of making it clear as to what the consequences are.
Well, you know, but some people will say, well, we don't need compassion in the law. We need, it's black and white. You're guilty or not guilty. Is that how the law operates, or is there shade?
Well, in district court, of course, the judge is the trier of fact and the law. And, okay, when one is either going to be guilty or not guilty. But the other issue is that once you're found guilty, how do we then sentence you? And clearly when a judge hears the facts accordingly, and if the facts, you know, stipulate or shows that someone needs to be treated in a way, in a different way, then the judge has that opportunity to do that, that they do not have to sentence everyone and give jail time, but can use alternative ways to let someone learn the consequences of their actions. And that is just what I would be doing, is trying to find alternative ways in those cases where someone is needs help, as opposed to have to be sentenced to jail.
And I guess this really comes into play in family court, because everything is not really a crime, and it allows, there's a lot of emotion.
You are absolutely right. Yes, because in family court, it's not a criminal issue. It's all about protecting children, whether or not it's going to be the child abuse and neglect case where the mother comes in, and how one handles that parent. Because basically, we want families to be reunited. That's the goal. We don't want to really remove children from their homes unless it is the last resort. And so, again, one has to look at the case in such a way that can protect families, but at the same time work with the mothers so that they can receive the treatment they need to be able to be reunited with their children. And how we see them can make a big difference in terms of a man or a woman, because we understand that people make mistakes. But the way we talk to people in a respectful manner and try to understand them and use empathy to make them understand that they just need to help themselves. Because if we come across in such a way that we're so judgmental, they don't hear us and they don't want to take the time to get the treatment they need to be able to reunite with their children. They sometimes, because I've seen so many of them, will tell you they feel so disrespected or feel as if they're being judged in such a way, they walk away from their own children. When sometimes if they could hear a kind word to let them know that we're here to support you as much as we can, and you have to do your part too, but we understand that you make a mistake, but we want to help you, I think women can bring that across much better than men. And I think that exactly what you've just stated, could a woman on the bench could make such a big difference.
Well, is the fact that, now see, family court is really the both parents and the children. But does family court also take in, is that divorce court, or is that a different divorce court different?
No, divorce court? Divorce. We also handle divorces, custody, visitation, domestic violence. Those are all areas of the law that district court handles. And of course, if you appeal, then you go to superior court.
Right. Well, in divorce court, it's really the same way also. I mean, because a lot of it, and most of it, is emotions and time invested and, you know, I mean, there are some that where it's really criminal, but and I don't know if that would go in divorce court or that goes in the criminal court or both places. But how is that they take care of, she stabbed him or knocked him around with a baseball bat, or he knocked her around with a baseball bat?
Well, I've been on, you know, in those situations, one needs to be careful and has to really, really pay attention to what both sides is saying, because one needs to be balanced, because there's we do know that there's domestic violence, that there are men who are very emotionally disturbed and react in a very angry way to women, and they're much, you know, smaller and do not have the same defensive mechanism as men to protect themselves, and we need to protect women. That's why assault on a female is a much higher offense than just assault, period. And we need to really listen to the women when they come in and hear what they have to say and ask them the pertinent questions so that we can know that they're being credible. And in cases where, you know, there is domestic violence, you can feel it, you can see it. It's so easy sometimes to determine. And we do know that there's times when they're in a divorce matter, women or men may claim a domestic violence issue has occurred. And then one has to recognize, you know, is this being used as a ploy to be able to get someone out of the home? So when those issues come about, as a judge, you know, whether in this situation, I'll be honest, both whether men or women, it's such a serious issue that I really do believe we have to be very careful and listen very tentatively in terms of how we make decisions in there. But we need to protect women who are oftentimes unable to defend themselves, and we have to protect them as much as possible. Because many times the children are involved in these situations because they're seeing what's going on and they're all emotional about it. And we all, you know, we have to see how we can protect them as well and incorporate that.
Okay, but a follow-up before Thomas asks you a question. If that's the case, if it's a, you know, say the husband beat up the wife or something like that, does that go into criminal court or does that go into family court?
Well, there's a criminal element of it. If she decides to file against him for criminal liability, yes, he can be charged in a criminal case and as a domestic violence case in terms of the abuse. So it can go both ways. He can be charged in both civilly and criminally for the same act.
Okay. So if civilly, that would go into family court then because they're kids?
Yes.
Suppose there was no kids.
It still can be, because remember, domestic violence is any time there's violence between a family member.
Okay.
And
okay.
So that's the difference.
So I was just curious. Now, to turn this around, now see, I'm thrilled to hear, and I think it's fantastic. You know, just like you said a moment ago, it's lady justice. It's not, you know, dude justice. It's very nice that we have equal representation. I think it should be, you know, split 50-50. But okay, whatever. At least we can get one female on the bench somewhere. That'd be a fantastic. You know, come on, Union County, let's do the right thing. But turn that around, though, and not to say that Union County is a boys' club, but, you know, hey, if you're the first one, you know, it is. So to turn it around, are you getting any kind of resistance or flack or attacks because you're the first female to show up? You know, you're going to crash the party here.
Right. Oh, you know, I don't want to go into details regarding that situation, but yes, I do feel the tension from time to time regarding that. But, you know, right. One is based, you know, resilience is all that matters. And, you know, when you feel as if you're doing something right, and it is your desire to move forward in that direction, you're not going to allow anyone to stop you. I'm quite sure they're not pleased with the fair matter of fact that I have stepped up for that position, but it is one that I've taken on, and I believe it's the people who should make the decision and make a decision as to who should sit at that bench and not just always allow the men to carry the ball all the time or to take that position. So this time around in 2012, November 6th, the people of Union County will make a decision as to who will represent them on in district court.
All right. Well, hopefully it will be a lady. That's all I'm saying.
Now, so have there ever been any women run for judge before?
Well, yes, I will admit that in Union County this will be the first. However, when there was a period of time when Union County was also a part of Stanley and Robinson County and so forth, and there have been women judges there. But once the split came about, I think within the last 5 or 7 years, there's been no women judges at this time.
Okay. So what are you doing now to make sure that when is your next – give us a plug. When is your next fundraiser or event or something that we can have some people go to, and how to get in contact with you?
Right. Well, I will be tomorrow, actually, at the NAACP banquet in Union County. I will be appearing there and speaking as well. Well, I am not the keynote speaker. I will just be present there, and I would hope to, if anyone would like to come and meet me, hear more about me, they can do so. Also, they can go to my website as well as it's Althea Richardson Tucker. .com. So if they would like to get more information as to who I am and what I'm about and what my background is, they can please do that.
Okay. Is there a phone number?
My phone number is 704-819-9098. They can reach me at that number.
Okay. And
just for clarity's sake, because you know how the internet is, Althea Richardson Tucker, is it Richardson-Tucker.com or just
no.
Richardson Tucker?
I'm sorry, I think I was speaking maybe a little bit too fast. It is Althea Richardson Tucker. There's no hyphenated. It's all one word, .com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Althea, I really love to have, we just love to have you on the show, and we want you to come back again before the election day.
I certainly will, and I thank you for inviting me today.
We're going to be doing a lot of more interviews with various people that we feel will make a major difference in this state. And we'd like you to be one of those that comes back on the show.
Absolutely. Just let me know when, and I will be here.
I will love to do that. We'd love to hear you. I want to thank you so much.
Best of luck breaking the boys' door
down. the proverbial glass ceiling.
Yes.
All right.
Claim victory. Thanks again.
Yes,
all right.
Ma'am. Take care.
Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
That was Al Clinton running for, I think it's 20C.
20C, Judicial
in
District.
Judicial District 20C.
Now, the neat thing there is not just running for a seat, but making history.
Making history.
I like that. I like history.
You like history making? Amen. Well, gee whiz, then you are not a teabagger, because if you like history, they're changing history.
History
they
doesn't
want
matter when you
no history. They want no history.
None. What?
No, because when you got history,
you might could,
you can't lie about it.
You can verify facts.
So you got your no. Listen, there is no such thing as fact checking. They've already said that.
Yep.
We don't believe in fact checking.
Right.
So whatever we tell you today, we can change it to make it something different tomorrow.
And because when if you remember, they're across the board. Remake of reality. They don't believe in fact-checking because facts end up on news. And then people find out. and so that's why they don't even want news now. You remember, that's the liberal media. We want to do away with that. We want to do away with facts. And then we were going to be left with Foxtainment.
Okay, so you're saying, so the news...
Because you remember, they've been after news for years.
Yeah,
just like they want to defund NPR and PBS because... There may be facts on that.
Oh, so you're saying the news, like Mitt Romney doesn't want a voucher system.
Mm-hmm.
That would be news.
Well, that would be a fact, and it would make the news.
Oh.
Because it's a fact.
Okay.
But if you don't have a fact, nor the news, you might not hear that statement.
Well, this is
and
what
you
he's
might
saying.
Vote for a person that says, I want to get rid of this and turn it into a voucher system. See?
So the idea of turning Medicare into a premium support system is that seniors would get a fixed amount to spend on health care. Well, it generally, as we think of it, is called a voucher system.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fair way of describing to voters the vision of Medicare under the Ryan Romney. You notice I said Ryan Romney, not Ryan Romney. Ryan, because...
Because it's Ryan's plan.
It's Ryan's
plan. Let's be honest.
And
well, so,
he said that this is it's very misleading. He doesn't want a voucher system, but he believes in states' rights.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is again, like I said about, you know, your poor grandparents. Think of your grandparents, people with fixed incomes. And we've got a guy here who says, let's do away with Medicare because it's freeloading. And then you'll just get put on a premium support. What is that? You pay a premium, you get support? I don't know, whatever. You get a premium support system. They say that you get a fixed amount to spend on your health care. Let me know how that works out for you. Anybody done anything more than stub a toe lately?
You're saying that...
Your $500 may be fine.
Well, they give you
the first time you get that little TB cough, you know, it may not be fine.
They give you a little booklet and they say stub toe is $5.
Yeah.
Hangnail is $6.
Pre-existing hangnail. I'm sorry, not
hangnail.
Even covered. That's your problem.
but we're going to put your child on there till he's 26. But, of course, he'll be on there, but he won't be covered.
Yes.
So
this is, again, it's part of this whole, I don't know, half-truth, untruth,
now, here's the thing.
But it all gets back to, I think, look, I see on my paper here, Michael Lawson's favorite point.
Oh, yes, probably.
Now, okay, Romney always goes around talking about Obamacare.
Oh, yeah.
He runs around the country, just like all the Republicans, honestly, because they're on the same talking points. But anyway, he runs around the country always saying that Obamacare, and he never will say Affordable Care Act.
Because of course not.
He wouldn't want to imply that anything's affordable that a Democrat came up with. But Obamacare, you know.
But he also doesn't want to recognize it that it's already passed, and it is the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, it's law.
That was passed.
It is law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and last time I checked my constitution, the president don't make law.
Nope.
So when he says day one,
Right.
I'll unmake that law. Excuse me?
Right.
In what fantasy world? But again,
ain't
here we go.
Happen.
What was that? Fact check? Oh, yeah. Okay. Don't check that fact. But this is, again, a person who has no conception of the United States Constitution and how it works.
So they want to get rid of it.
They don't understand. It's the dictatorial mindset. When I go in day one, I'm going to shoot
day,
you, Pilgrim.
Day one, I'm going to take a bath.
Yeah. So, okay. He goes around, though, saying that Obamacare, which, you know, devastated our economy, put us into a tailspin, evacuated Iraq, and shoots old people in the street. Obamacare will set up an unelected board of bureaucrats.
Yes, an unelected board of bureaucrats.
And apparently this unelected board of bureaucrats will be following you around on scooters. And when you go into the office to see your doctor, they'll be there.
They'll be there?
When you go into the hospital, they'll be there.
They'll be there.
They'll stand there in the room, and they're going to tell you what treatments you can have, because that's the government intruding on your rights. Now, this has been paid for by Mitt Romney's bullshit. Again, your favorite point, absolutely untrue. Since when, ever, have you seen a bureaucrat?
Hey, please. I used to work for the government. Worked for them 25 years. Every time I went to the doctor, it was just me and my doctor. And my doctor would say, oh, let me call the insurance company and see if they will okay it. He didn't say, let me call the federal government. Let me call the bureaucrat who's sitting out in the waiting room to see if he'll pay for it. He said, the insurance company. Let me call United Healthcare. Let me call
Blue Cross, whatever. You know, look, this is
now.
The
do these
thing.
Guys are these
Every
insurance
time,
companies hiring these government workers?
Yeah. Every time I go, and I've got all the little ones. When we have to go get our well checks for school, or did they get their immunization? Did they have a whooping cough this season or anything like that? You know, anytime you go anywhere, you can go to a dentist office. The first thing they say out of the fire is, let me see which plan you have.
Right.
And let me call them to see if you can receive treatment or a shot or a pill or anything. That's who they call, and that's what they see. They look at your ABC card and see if you can get XYZ treatment.
That's right.
And that's what determines. And then you can go see the doctor, and the doctor will go, well, sorry, gee willikers, that's an insurance company standing in the way. Ain't no bureaucrat. But listen, this is one of the things.
They're also trying to say as well, as a matter of fact, these same politicians, have free health care.
Right.
And can choose between 15 or 20 health care systems.
Yes.
Every year.
Every time. And it,
but they don't want you to have the same thing they have.
Yeah. And better yet, since they write the law, but they give it to themselves for life. I'm just saying.
Gave it to themselves for life.
Not talking about
and their entire family.
Yeah. How convenient.
How convenient.
How you like that, 47%ers?
That means we're paying for them
to
screw us.
Yeah.
We're paying for them to have that insurance, but preventing us from getting it.
If you're taking money from taxpayers, doing nothing, you're taking money and getting some things. Is that freeloading?
They're one of that 1%.
Yeah. Okay. So, but again, here we go. Looking at your fact checks, everybody, factcheck.org, political fact, everything else. So it's one of the biggest lies they've ever told. One of the biggest whoppers
they ever tell.
National Journal even said it was the biggest whopper that he's ever said. These are things that are just completely wrong. They're completely
a Medicare book. And that where they get that from is that when they that board, that so-called board they were talking about, was the board, a bipartisan board, that was set up to see how the insurance companies could pay less and give you more. Mm-hmm. That's what the board that was set up.
Well, again, this is just their constant drumbeat fear tactic.
The insurance is going to pay more and give you more.
Right.
Not less.
Right. So, but the Republicans always do this drumbeat. You know, everything is doom and gloom. It's bad. It's just, but if you remember where this came out originally, now they've dropped it since because they got so much flack for it because it was so over the top. But when it first came out, it wasn't just you're going to have the bureaucratic panel sitting in there instead of doctors and the lovely insurance companies.
Right.
They said it's going to be a death panel.
Oh,
you remember that?
The death panel.
Like, everybody gets a little doctor.
How many people died since the Obamacare has been instituted?
Hey,
I haven't heard.
I'd like to go look at the statistics. Maybe somebody can send me online. Anybody. I'd appreciate it. What are the stats for how many people were dying before the Affordable Care Act and after? How many more people have been
dying? And it hasn't even been fully implemented yet. It won't be implemented fully until 2014.
The thing's being phased in like slower than snails.
Now let me tell you something about the insurance company.
But they're still complaining.
Here it is. They said, he also said the other day in the debate, the $2,000 increase since the Affordable Care Act was instituted, that we're paying $2,000 more in insurance premiums. That's an outright lie. The man lies through his teeth. Let me tell you something.
$2,000.
I pay for my oldest daughter's insurance. So I paid for it 4 years ago when she lost her job. I believe it was like $200, $226, something like that, $225 a month. 30 years old, still paying for it. The following year, went up to $275. Following year, after that, went up to $295. Following year, went up to $367. The following year, which was this year, you got to notice, it was going up to $406. I said, these freaking criminals.
Yep.
So I said, well, let me search. I got to search and get another better, you know, we got to search on this and see if we can get better insurance. So I got a hold of this one broker, and he says, look, he says, I don't want you guys to pay more. He says, even though I'm a broker, he says, but the insurance is really good. And I happened to get a good broker who was searching. So he says, well, see if the insurance company will give you a higher, maybe you can pay a higher premium and still get the same amount of insurance.
Right.
So when I call back to him, look, I'm dropping you. I'm going to see you as soon as I get a hold of another insurance company. I'm dropping you guys. So he said, well, we just sent out a new letter in the mail. You should be getting it. And, you know, I was outside getting the mail at the time. I mean, this is so coincidental. And I said, you know, I have the letter in my hand right now. I opened it up. He said, well, open up that letter. This might help you. And it said, we are glad to inform you that because of the Affordable Health Care Act, your insurance premiums have gone down.
They went up $2,000. Is that what you just said?
Your insurance premium for the same amount has gone down.
That doesn't fit with the official.
I looked at this. I said, "Nah, there's something wrong here." Am I reading it? I said, "You're saying that?" He says, "Well." So then they said, "Well, here's the difference. Here's what we're going to do. The insurance premiums have gone down, but the higher deductible, because we had a $500 deductible, if you want that, it's gonna be increased by, I think it was like $20. I said, well, it's still not the 407. Like 487 now, 497, which is close to 407. So I said, well, let me get back to you. So I spoke to my insurance broker. He said, look, you tell them that you want $2,500 deductible. He said, I can give you a supplemental insurance that is only $42. What are they going to sell you for the supplemental if you took $2,500? So I called them up. Matter of fact, they were on the conference call. They didn't know he was on the conference call. They said, oh, we can give you $226 for a $2,500 deductible, which was the same price I was paying 4 years ago. So I said, well, hold on just a minute. I put him on hold, got back to my insurance broker. He said, look, I can give you the same insurance, and we'll supply you with a supplemental for $42, which will bring you up to $267. So that means you won't have to pay that $2,500 deductible. I said, that works for me.
Yeah.
So I have the same insurance that I had 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But the problem is that I'm not paying that 407 because of the Affordable Health Care Act,
right.
The insurance has gone down.
Right.
So when he says your insurance is going up $2,500, because of the Affordable Care Act, it's an outright lie. It went up 20. If it's going up at all, it's going up because the insurance company wants to make more money. Period.
Yeah, I mean, all things go up a little bit all the time. Anyway, again, so it's just the common theme here: a liar lies and hints.
let's see who we got here on the phone. We got another call.
Ah,
hello there. Who's this?
Michael, it's Craig.
Oh, it's Craig Maddens.
Wow.
From Hakoa.
Yes, sir.
And what's up with Hakoa? How's it going?
Everything's going good. We're expanding. We're coast to coast. We've got some new franchises coming on board. We've got new offices opening up in Gastonia and in Shelby and Lincolnton. We've got a new office opening up in Melbourne, Florida, and we've got a big office opening up in Lake Norman for coverage to Concord, Kannapolis, Huntersville, Cornelius, Davidson, et cetera. So we're expanding locally as well as around the country.
Well, how do you get to all these places at one time? But when you got one of them time machines?
I guess it's hard work. It's finding people that are interested in owning a business that can generate a six-figure income with very little investment. And it just takes time, and like everything else, it pays off some hard work. But the business is designed to give people freedom to do a whole lot of things aside from working.
Well, Craig, hey, this is Thomas. Just wanted to point out, you're not helping out the Republican mantra. This is supposed to be the dark ages. This is supposed to be the collapse of America. This is supposed to be the black hole for business. How can you possibly be growing a business in this terrorist communist economy we got?
Well, you know, the other part of the coin, you know, people, if they do hard work and they just stay focused and they don't pity themselves over what's going on, even Romney has made an incredible amount of money over the last couple of years. I mean, we're talking huge.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he got so much money that he hit it in the Cayman Islands.
it's sad that I pay more, my percent in taxes. You know, it's the same old thing all over again where they're all talking about on the insurance and on the taxes, you know, not lowering the taxes or whatever, but they're screwing around with the rate. And it's sad that I pay more in taxes percentage-wise than Exxon. I mean, it's absolutely mind-boggling to me.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely horrendous. And if Romney gets in there, not only do women run the risk of losing, and seniors, anybody benefiting, and women's rights and everything else, but because of his kowtowing to the Tea Party in a lot of cases, I mean, you're looking at basically what happened, in my opinion, what happened in Germany when the Nazi Party started coming in and people started giving in and said, that'll never happen to me.
Exactly.
Right. Until they looked next door and the neighbor was gone.
I tell you what, if you could, Michael, you know, Hokoa and my wife and I, we give out these prescription cards. If anybody's listening to your show, or Thomas, if you know of anybody that needs help with the prescriptions, there are programs out there. We give out free prescription cards. Nobody has to pay a dime. They don't have to sign up. They don't have to register. We even have the cards in Spanish that if you present at a time of purchase at any major pharmacy, you can save up to 75% or more off the cost of your prescriptions.
Tell us more about that, how that works.
Well, you know, if the doctor says you got to have a pill and you got to pay, you know, if you got to go to the pharmacist to pay for it, we've got, for example, some people that have children that have asthma. So they're paying a couple $100, maybe even $500 or $600 a month. They use this card. It's just like an insurance card. It's not a coupon. They just show it, and they've cut their cost probably 60-70%. So going from a little better than $500 to less than $200. And you just show it at the time of purchase, Walgreens, Costco, Sam's Club, Target, Rite Aid, Walgreens, Giant Genie. They all accept the card. It's good in any state. So family members of Minnesota, God forbid, if you've got Minnesota, part of Arizona, it doesn't matter. Go ahead.
Hey, you might have to go back to the printer and get more cards.
Well, I have some in the car. And the thing is that these are cards you don't throw away once you go to the drugstore. You keep them and present it. It's like just a regular. It's a discount card that you keep permanent.
Right. Sometimes people will sit around and they'll mope and they'll whine and they'll complain and they just won't do anything, and maybe they'll forego their prescriptions or their medications, whatever the case might be. Look, I use the card. I'm not a poor man by any means, and I'm not a wealthy man by any means. When I use my Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance, I'm told that a prescription's only going to I'm only going to save $20, and I got to pay $200. I'm not happy. I use my prescription card. I mean, I use the card. I can't use it with the Blue Cross, but in lieu of the thing, then I paid $60. So it actually saved me $120. Getting people to accept the fact that there are programs out there, and there's no stigma to it. Who cares? You go up to the pharmacist, you show them the card, and you save money. The pharmacists get paid no matter what.
It's just an awareness. It's being a smart shopper. It's you're going to where there's a sale, or you're going to where there's a cheaper product, or there's a way to save money and make your life a little better. That's all.
That's exactly right. And all you do is show it, and you keep using the card. If you need cards, all you got to do is call Michael or whatever. Or Michael, I don't know how you want to do it. I can get you cards to have at the show, or we give them out through churches. I was at McDonald's last night, right before choir practice, and there was a woman there with two kids. I gave her the cards in Spanish, and there are some people out in the parking lot. Sometimes people look the gift horse in the mouth. I guess that's how the expression goes. They don't believe it. It's too good to be true. It's got to be a gimmick. Well, there isn't. There's no sign up. Nobody, even if you're here illegally, you still get to use the card.
Right.
You do not have to sign. You don't have to register.
Use the card. Now you can't use these cards. You can't use the cards with another discount program. You can't use the cards with another discount program, but you can.
Correct. Yeah, it's just like, but you can't use discount. You know, it's like buying a pizza. You can't use two coupons when you're buying a pizza. You choose one or the other.
So you get me some of those cards, and I know I had some that I gave to my daughter for her job, and she gave them all out, and the people just love them. So, but what I want to know now about, if you get me those cards, we can get together next week and you get some cards and give them to me.
Yeah. But, it's also going to be, it'll also be interesting to see how many people are complaining on this whole scenario between the insurance programs different between Romney and Obama, how many people will actually go out to vote to bring this whole thing about. You cannot I really believe this, that you cannot allow the programs that Mitt Romney wants to get to take place happen. I mean, it's just not right. It's just not right.
No. Absolutely correct. And the programs that he wants to implement are not programs at all. They're just cuts and everything. There will be no programs to implement if he gets in.
That's why they've also called it for years. Republican programs are not, there are no type of government program. All they are is redistribution of wealth.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, that is the real
redistribution. By the night, if he was going to do the voucher, it was a simple question that Jim Lehrer put up to him, and he refused to answer it over and over and over again. Do you do the voucher?
Right.
Do you want to do the voucher or not? I mean, this is not a hard question. Do you want a voucher or do you not want a voucher? Yes or no? Get an answer and move on. They should have had Jeff Daniels from the newsroom doing this debate.
Yeah.
I want an answer. I've watched your ads. I've heard you speak. You tell me one thing, then you come on a debate, and you tell me something entirely different. I don't know who I'm watching here or who I'm listening to.
Well, that's absolutely true. Well, you know, listen, tell us a little more about HOCOA.
Well, HOCOA is on call for people 24/7 with no music, no extensions. It's live. It's local. We are designed, quite frankly, to alleviate all the stress and worry of people trying to find contractors. We remove all that stress and worry of home repair and maintenance by allowing you to place one call, tell us what you want, hang up the phone, and then we'll have thoroughly screened local insured contractors, service providers, call you back. And if you want to use them, you pay them, not us, so nobody's adding anything to the bill. We save people an incredible amount of time, effort, energy, and especially when the work is done, our people stand behind it or we don't give them any more work. So if you want to paint the house, if you need a computer tech, a maid, exterminator, handyman, heating and air, electrical, appliance, plumbing, decking, fencing, landscaping, tree service, whatever you need, you call us up, tell us what you want, you hang up the phone, we'll have people call you back within the hour, and you can get estimates. You don't have to do the work, but you can get your estimates, and if you do the work, again, you pay them, not us. We do a follow-up call after to make sure you were taken care of. And if they haven't performed, we kick them out. So you're not only keeping your money here locally, but, you know, when everything goes well, it's great. But in the event that there is a situation that comes up and you need to talk to somebody, we are live, we are local. And why would you want to use a list when you can have somebody local and somebody live? Why would you accept advice from a stranger? My God, if you needed help at the house, would you stop somebody in your parking lot, a parking lot at the grocery store, and say, could you recommend a handyman to me? All our follow-up calls are verified. All our recommendations are verified. So if you use this, Michael, we call you up. We know that you're going to tell us good, bad, or indifferent. We know that it's validating the performance and the service that's been done. Plus, people like Sears commercials on with us, so we can save people an incredible amount of money on appliances, TVs, mattresses by going through them. Maybe.
Where are you at? Because we're sort of losing your call. Where are you at? In the Netherlands? Hello?
No, I think we did lose the call. Well, anyway, hey, Deanna, that was a fantastic thing, what he was talking about. Because I like the fact that, he's helping people. He's providing the service. Mm-hmm. But I like the fact that he keeps it all local.
Right.
You know, yeah, a lot of people can save money by farming something out all over the United States.
We have another call in here right now. We just lost him. Hello, who's this?
Brad Thompson.
Brad Thompson.
The one and only.
The one and only, the man.
Don't know about all that, but I'm here.
Brad, what's going on? What is going on?
Well, you know, we're counting down, Michael. You know, soon this country will make a decision about which way it's going to go. And I think here in North Carolina, at least, you know, it's pretty tight. I think depending upon which poll you want to watch, one of the other people is leading by 1% in the presidential race. So it's going to be decision time for many people. And as soon as we start with early voting, you know, I think we'll make a decision about which way we want to go.
Hold on 1 minute, Brad, because we had just got our call back. Hold on just a minute. I'm going to leave you live. We lost you. Where were you at there, Craig?
Oh, yeah, the more you pay for phone service, my phone's being monitored by the Romney campaign. So they cut me off. Out here on Providence Road, I was going through a very strong, not-so-bright Republican area that
keywords like saving people money and building
community. Well, I was just talking about Brad Thompson on the phone here also with you, Craig. I wanted to ask you, Craig, you go, what do you think about the race up to now?
What do I think about the race up to now between Obama and Romney?
Right.
Well, you know, when you stop thinking, all in all, it has been relatively quiet for, in my opinion, for somebody or people that are spending incredible amounts of money. I mean, we're talking probably when this whole thing is done, borderline on, I'm going to say $1.5 billion, maybe more between the two candidates. It really isn't. When you stop thinking, it really isn't a whole lot going on. You haven't heard a whole lot from Biden. You haven't heard a whole lot from. I don't even know who the hell he is that's running with Romney. But I think it just goes to show that
we lost you again, Craig.
What?
We lost you again.
His name is Ryan, but I think that's a little consequence.
You got me now?
Yeah, I got you now.
You got me now?
Yep, gotcha. Can you hear me? Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
All right, so up to now, I still think it's going to be Obama's race. I still think it's going to be there. I think the Republican Party even knows it. I think they Romney up the clean house. So that in another 4 years, they'll be able to run a clean slate if there'll still be a Republican Party as we know it.
Well, that's the problem.
That's
the problem. And Brad, I want you to also chime in on that, because as far as I'm concerned, if there isn't a viable Republican Party, there will not be a viable Democratic Party.
Well, I can tell you this. We do have people who are determined that they are not going to have a government as the great leveler in this society. By whatever name they call themselves, Tea Partyists or Republicans or conservatives, their sense is that the government goes too far in terms of trying to make things equitable for all people. And therefore, in this generation, we have to stop this movement toward becoming a country where every person has both the right and the privilege to have mobility. And so those folks are really working very hard to make sure that the government, as they would say, gets out of the lives of people. But and ultimately, it means that the people who have the money keep the money. That's the bottom line. And I think that if we're going to become the country that we're supposed to be, then I think everybody should have the opportunity. Not that everybody will get, but everybody should have the opportunity to fully participate in the greatness of this country. And that includes the riches of this country.
I think that's well stated.
Craig, you're very familiar with your old friend, the one who's running for governor on a Republican side, Mr. McCrory. How do you think he has handled his fame with the Tea Party in North Carolina?
Well, you know, Pat, it's hard to figure. You know, I think it goes back to you don't know what's going to happen or, you know, when he – the arena was the perfect example that he didn't have the ability to put the arena out of the box, so to speak, and just have legislation the legislative to just for defeated two.
You're breaking up terrible. You're breaking up terrible.
One, and he still, he cost people millions of dollars that were for the arena, and he cost people that were against the arena a lot of money. He goes. I guess he's fair weather, and the fact that he's not campaigning in Mecklenburg County to any great extent, I think, goes to show that even last time, Mecklenburg County didn't go for him. He did not carry Mecklenburg County.
Well, yeah, but he's got a lot of baggage out. He's got that big boondoggle, the NASCAR Hall of Fame, where 25 people have gone to in the last 4 years since he's been up there. I mean, we're paying through our IT for that building. You got that light rail that they had more use during the convention than they ever had the entire time since it's been put in. And the boondoggle you just said about the arena. I mean, those are three things right there that we, the people here in Charlotte, have gotten screwed for.
And then the way he and then you also got to remember, you know, a lot of times, politicians or whatever, even though they're supposed to represent the people, they don't. But look at how they treat the people that are around them. He threw a lot of his administration under the bus, so to speak, no pun intended, or under the train, when he let Lynn Wheeler take the hit for the rail, and he threw a support behind Dan Ramirez. And then after Dan Ramirez was a total waste, he threw support in a different direction, but you know, there's no know who you're dealing with. And when you don't know who you're dealing with, it's very hard when people, quite frankly, are losing or have already lost faith in the government. There's a poll show that they're dissatisfied with the representatives. It's horrible. So why would you vote for a guy that when two-thirds of the people in the community say we don't want it, and logistically, it was close to two-thirds because of the number of people that actually voted on the arena. It was overwhelmingly defeated. It's not like only 10% of the people voted. You had over 50% of the people vote, so it really did reflect a huge amount of people that it's not so much that they didn't want the arena, they just didn't want to pay it with public funds.
Right.
And he totally told those people to, you know, go stick it in your ear. We're going to do it anyhow. So why would you do it? You could do it on the state level.
Brad, what are you hearing about McCrory? Because you're not in, you don't know him as well as we do, I don't believe, but what are you hearing about these things that he has caused here in Charlotte, that all these debacles? Are you hearing any of that out there in Raleigh, the Wake County area?
Well, I think throughout North Carolina, the sense is that McCrory is ahead in this gubernatorial race, but I would say he and his people who think like him have been pretty good at taking rotten meat and putting new bread on top of it. So therefore, many people have been convinced that the sandwich is not rotten because it has new bread on it. But I must tell you that, you know, if you look beneath the surface on a lot of these things, not only McCrory, there's a reason why he has not released his tax returns. There's a reason why Romney has not released his tax returns. That their support of policies, their support of methods in terms of wealth building have been against many of the people who they want to vote for them now. So therefore, they don't disclose with the feeling that that they can take this new bread on this spoiled meat and they can convince people that it's a good sandwich. It's not. It will make you sick. And I would say that those people who embrace this point of view are not really looking underneath the bread to find out what kind of meat is between the slices of bread.
Well, have they heard anything across the state about the fiasco with the NASCAR Hall of Fame and the light rail and the arena? Have they heard anything about that?
Well, I think that most people are convinced by the broader messages. You know, how does he look on TV? How does he look as compared to his opponent, no matter what his opponent says? And McCrory has a way of looking non-threatening. So therefore, the specifics of the rail, in the debate, he kind of mentioned that the rail was one area that he work to build nonpartisan support for an idea. So therefore, he embraces it as his willingness to reach across the aisle to get results that are ultimately beneficial. So he uses the negative as a positive in terms of trying to convey what he has done. The NASCAR Hall of Fame, those types of things, they don't really hit. The sense is that Charlotte has been a successful city that has grown tremendously, that has had jobs and unemployment that below the state average, and that he has been one of the reasons why there has been a miracle in Charlotte, and that's what he wants to sell, and he has plenty of money. Those advertisements on TV don't mention his failings. They only mention those things that speak more positively to what he's done.
Well, did you think that the president's the lieutenant governor has some coattails if the president does well in North Carolina?
I really don't. I think that the people who are running for election in this term have to work to make sure that their messages are heard. I don't believe that the president's coattails are going to be very, very long. In fact, I think the president is in a dogfight in North Carolina, and he may prevail, he may not. So therefore, we can't say that other people can be elected on the president because there's a drop-off between those people who vote for the president versus those who vote for governor or those who vote for the judges. There's a drop-off. You don't get as many people voting in those races as you do for the president. So I don't think the president is going to have very long coattails, even though I think those who embrace the president's policies are embracing a North Carolina that will work better for most of the people who live here.
Well, you see, the president didn't have long coattails the last time. He only won the state by 14,000-plus votes, and we elected everybody, practically.
Well, we didn't elect everybody. I mean, we had Council of State members that were lost. We had judges that were lost. And so, therefore, the president's coattails were not so long as to drag everybody who was positive thinking with him. And we had a governor who won by a very small majority. And I would say that that majority was not sufficient to sustain her. Nor the commitment was not so strong to the president. And in 2010, that we didn't see both chambers of the House of Representatives transition to Republican hands. So I understand the issue of coattails, and I think they did benefit through the governor through the president's popularity. But the coattails were not so broad as to drag everybody across the finish line as being victorious.
Okay, well, but it was the coattails were long enough to get Larry Kissel in.
Well, Larry Kissel, is one of those people who pretends to be something he's not, And I would just say that Larry Kissel has a lot of explaining to a lot of people why he wouldn't attend the convention, why he would vote for to indict Eric Holder, why he did not support health care, why he did not support a lot of things. He won't support Nancy Pelosi. He said he would not support the president. I mean, you know, goodness gracious, Larry, come on. You know, what are you going to be? And I think the people of the 8th Congressional District have clearly said, listen, fool me once, shame on me. Shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And they have opened their eyes to a sense that maybe they have not viewed this guy in the true light of which he actually votes rather than what he says.
Well, but he's an opportunist, just like Mitt Romney. He's an etch-a-sketcher. I mean, he is, he came in there and you didn't hear me say that. I didn't do that. And now he's doing something completely different.
Well, are we going to be hoodwinked or are we going to be led by truth telling? We've been hoodwinked quite a bit. And I'm not so sure, you know, we'll see what happens, between now and November 6th. To see if America will vote with its eyes wide open, or they would work for somebody who will tell them anything and then do something different.
Well, speaking of voting with the eyes wide open, I hope that people do pay attention because, you know, McCrory has been running around the state. You know, he's alternately said that he wants to make North Carolina, you know, more like South Carolina. You know, that's a joy. Or, recently traveled all over with Scott Walker,
right?
And he literally said, I mean, I got the quote right here. He said, there was no greater role model in the nation than Scott Walker. That's what he wants to do. And he said he wants to bring the same kind of strong leadership qualities and pro-growth policies that he brought to his state. Oh, my God, are you kidding me? I mean, listen to the man and take him for his word. That's what he has in mind for North Carolina.
Well, you know, North Carolina and North Carolinians who would be casting this vote have a way of voting against their self-interest. We've had politicians to be successful statewide who have not articulated a point of view of one North Carolina, and they have been successful in rallying a majority of the vote. What we have to do is to I don't believe that reflects the opinion of the majority of North Carolinians. So, therefore, what we have to do is to work very hard between now and the election day to make sure that whomever we put in these seats represents the point of view of the majority of our state. I don't believe that's Scott Walker. I don't believe that's Pat McCrory. I don't believe it's Willard Mitt Romney. So, I don't think that they are representing the majority of the people in the state. But unless we vote, unless we turn out, unless we cast a majority of the ballots, whoever wins, wins. That's the way the system works. So, therefore, we're going to have to work very hard to make sure people do get the right message and that we mobilize those people who are like-minded so that the minority voice in North Carolina is not the majority when it comes to governance.
Right. I absolutely agree with you, but I hope that people do pay attention, and I hope they do vote for
what I agree with you on that.
Rather, when the system proposes itself, we get things like, you know, Jesse Hounds and Strom Thurmond forever.
Right.
I mean, that's what happens. That's the system. The people have a different opinion.
Does North Carolina have the ability to for recall? Of a governor? Did you know of?
Yeah, I think there's a recall capability. I mean, you have to have a certain percentage of the voters to sign a petition. You know, so when you talk about a recall of the governor, they're going to have to be an egregious failure by the governor in terms of carrying out the policies because, in essence, what you have is the ability, you know, to operate for 4 years. Pretty much impervious to public accountability, but you know, 4 years from now, you know, you have to stand before the people, and they can determine that you're not going to serve anymore. But I believe that the recall provisions are fairly high in terms of the number of voters that have to petition for a recall.
Right. It has to be something extremely serious, not just we want to revote.
Okay. Well, what do you think the how does it look? You've got a couple of more moments with you. What do you think the how it looks as far as getting out the African American vote this year in North Carolina? Is there a weakness, a tepidness, or do you think they're on upswing?
Well, I'll speak to that because I spent a lot of time working with African American voters, and though I think there's a certain pride in terms of the policies and the directions that Barack Obama has taken the country, there's no doubt that people of low wealth have suffered greatly because of maybe the policies that, of the previous administration. There have been people who've been out of work for 3 years. There are people who lost their houses. There have been people who have had their jobs cut back in terms of hours or even lost. And so there has been a suffering that has inordinately occurred among those people who are poor, not necessarily those people who are wealthy. Those people who are wealthy are making money hands over fist, the very same people that, that are in the talented, the top wage earners of the country. But the 47% of the people, they've had a tough time. So they have to have confidence that the United States and the policies that work for fairness, that work for justice, that work for equality, that these policies are worth fighting for, even though they've gone through difficult times. And a lot of times those folks are going to have to kind of bear up their own burdens and say, well, we want to work for a better future. We've done that in the past. We worked for better futures for ourselves, for our families, even though we had to make sacrifices. And I would say that that's going to be required here. There's a better way for this country to take. And for my money, Barack Obama represents a better way than the other people. And I think that ultimately will be felt by the vast majority of people of color. Now, there are people who feel differently. There are people who feel like, for example, the same-sex issue is enough for them to sit on their hands. Well, they ignore all the other things. They ignore all the tax cuts for the low-wealth people. They ignore the conditions in which George Bush delivered the government. They ignore the issue of people now having access to health care. They ignore the issue of how we were bullies in the world, and now we have become cooperative, and we have created a sense that we are a country that really has integrity. Those kinds of things are very, very, very important, and to a certain extent, I think they will mobilize and they will energize the African American vote to be similar to its turnout in 2008. And so, people are wrong when they believe that people vote for people of color only because of their color.
Right.
They vote for them because of what they stand for. They believe, vote for them because of what they believe. They vote for them because of policies and the directions in which they think they would take them. And in that case, the enthusiasm for this president versus the person who's running against him should be very, very high. And I think it will be in this election.
Okay, hold on 1 minute. We got somebody else who wants to get involved in this. Hello, who's this?
This is Senator Floyd McKissick speaking. That sounded like Brad Thompson on the radio there.
Well, that was Brad. Floyd, how you doing, Senator?
Yes, fine. How are you doing, my friend? Everything going well. Brad's one of those true champions who has his pulse on the thoughts and opinion and moods of people throughout this state and throughout this country. So I have enormous regard for his political expertise, his savvy, and his ability to succinctly state issues and understand what we need to do to mobilize votes and to get good people elected in public office here in this state.
Thank you, Floyd.
You're welcome.
But Brad was just telling us about the how he felt it was going here in North Carolina. What's your take on it from your position, Senator?
Well, I think things are going extraordinarily well. I feel like we're getting people energized and enthusiastic about getting out to vote. And I think we've built a lot of momentum with the Democratic National Convention coming out of Charlotte. And wherever I go throughout this state, whether it's in the urban areas or even out in the rural areas, I hear a lot of talk, a lot of conversation about the need for people to get out and vote when early voting opens on October 18th. I know I was up in Granville County last night and meeting with a lot of folks from up in that area, a lot of the elected officials, from those serving in the county commissioners to those running for judges. And, you know, if you talk to those, whether they're in Butner, Oxford, Creedmoor, or STEM, they're all excited, they're all enthused, and they're ready to mobilize and to do what they need to do on Election Day, and that I'm very proud of. And I know that that's true throughout other parts of this state, whether you're in Winston-Salem or Charlotte or here in Durham, where I'm based out of.
Well, what is the difference in the Democrat-Republican standoff in the Senate?
Well, I think the in the Senate here in North Carolina, is that what you're referring to, or? Of course, I'm a member, you know, of course, a member of the state Senate. Right. I mean, I think the greatest challenge we have is that right now, if we had Governor Perdue in office, she did an outstanding job in vetoing a lot of bills, like the voter ID bill that came along. It was designed to suppress votes. But, you know, when votes like that come up for a vote in the Senate right now, you know, it takes a 3/5 majority to override. And right now they do have that in the North Carolina Senate in terms of Republican majority. They do not have it in the House, and that's been critical this year. So, I mean, there's been an opportunity to sustain the governor's vetoes on matters. But I think that, you know, we just need to be careful about the mood of this state and where things are going. The Republicans have come into Raleigh and they've cut education by over $1 billion. That's money going to our public universities. It's going to our public schools, whether you're in kindergarten through 12th grade or even the preschool programs like Mort Ford Smart Start. I mean, there have been reductions made that even a Republican Superior Court judge declared unconstitutional because they deprive students of the right to a basic education and leave our state constitution. So, I mean, you know, we need to be concerned about those budget cuts to education because they've provided the doors of access to opportunity for so many of people here in North Carolina, regardless of your race, regardless of your background or your economic status. You could get into school and work your way up and get good jobs and get a good education, and we need to make sure our schools are preparing our children and preparing our adults for the jobs of tomorrow as we move to a knowledge-based economy. So the Republicans have been involved in doing some things that were detrimental to us? Absolutely. The budget cuts to education are terrible. We've lost over 6,000 jobs. I mean, they lack compassion frequently when it was time to provide for long-term unemployment benefits for those who have been unemployed for extended period of time. They refused to do it. It took the governor entering executive order to put them into place, and these were people who needed those unemployment benefits just to put food on the table, to pay their rent or to pay their mortgages or to get gas for the car, to go out and look for jobs. You know, you're talking about a whole different philosophy, a different mentality, and we need to understand that the type of progress we've made in this state over the last 50 years would not have occurred if you had a Republican majority in place. As I say, voter suppression is one of the things on their minds this year. They knew that Obama won this state by 14,000 votes. So they came up with voter ID bills they tried to get passed. They tried to decrease the early voting period by a week. They tried to get rid of early voting on Sundays. They tried to do all types of things, get rid of straight party ticket voting. We don't need things that are repress votes. We don't need things to deny people their constitutional right to vote. We need to be a society that encompasses people's constitutional rights and encourages them to participate, not to try to stop it, not to try to prevent it. And then that voter ID bill was not needed to start with because we don't have a problem. Even back in 2008, when there were over 5 million people voting in this state, there were only 44 alleged cases of voter fraud with our state board of elections. They're trying to cure a problem that doesn't exist. We don't need people in office with that type of mentality or mindset.
And that was not voter fraud where Joe Blow came in and said he was John Blow and voted in his place, that they might have been in the wrong place because they had moved. There was a lot of, it wasn't actual voter fraud like the Republicans now are being accused of because they did commit voter fraud in Florida.
They did indeed. And in fact, that company that was employed in Florida was employed here in North Carolina. They had to terminate them because they were putting the same type of signatures and handwritings on multiple applications for people getting registered to vote. And the Republicans.
So this is the pot calling the kettle black.
Well, what I would say is that usually the voter fraud cases that you had in some instances might have been people who participated in early voting and then they forgot and they went back and voted again on election day. So, I mean, it's situations like that sometimes. I mean, but when you look at 44 cases out of over 5 million people that participated, I mean, there are 100 counties in North Carolina. That average is out to less than one case per county. It's not a problem that truly exists.
There is someone who's on the line right now who I've told this before. He's a Republican, a African-American Republican, and he believes that we need that voter ID, although he's from South Carolina, in the heart where he can hardly go to the store without having an ID checked with him. I mean, what's the mentality of some of these people that who is African-American and needs to have all these things shoved in his face, and he still don't believe it? I mean, what do you do with someone like this?
Well, I think you got to be patient with that person, and you just can't laugh in their face. You really have to hear what they're saying, and then you have to provide arguments that are unassailable that address the concerns that they raise. There are people out there who are African American people who believe that white people are superior. And, I don't believe that necessarily that black people are superior, but I believe that all people deserve the same credit in terms of the things that they can do and they cannot. So therefore, I cannot embrace a philosophy that assumes that somebody is superior to me. I mean, that's ludicrous. So therefore, I have to work at those things to say what kinds of things would encourage those folks who are like me that need to be included in this country. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, do you think that black folks are 5 times more likely to commit crimes? Do you think that black folks should die 12 or 15 years before people who are not black? Do you believe that black folks should have 1/10 of the wealth of other people? I mean, well, what do you think about these results? And if we're going to have a community, a society that works for everybody, you got to acknowledge that these things are inequities that exist in our society, not because there are differences in the capabilities of people, but they're differences that are manifest because our society has not been fair and open to everybody.
Right. Well, I'm going to bring this gentleman on because I know he wants to ask both you two gentlemen a question. Yes, sir. Are you
Hello?
There?
Yes, am I here? Am
Mr.
I on?
Mr. Bighead, are you there?
Yes, I am on.
Mr. Gary.
I've been enjoying the discussion thus far, but nevertheless, I would like to say that the voter ID laws, I think it's directly tied to this whole idea of immigration and how the current administration supports immigration. And I do believe that by immigrants coming in, they need to be subject to the same regulations as normal Americans. So it is, I believe that the voter registration or voter ID laws is nothing but more just to add a more governmental oversight, shall we say, on immigration and people coming in, because when most immigrants move in, they're going to go toward the Democratic Party. Yes, that's what Bill O'Reilly says on Fox News, that when most immigrants come in, they go toward, because there's a myth that the Republican Party is anti-minority, which is not true. So I don't believe that one race is superior. I just believe in my Judeo-Christian values, and I believe that Republican ideology is what is going to be the basis of American success.
Well, one thing I can say, and this is Senator McKissick speaking, sir. I mean, I respect your ideology and whatever your views are that you may embrace, but I think Latinos are not a monolithic block. Certainly there's some that are more conservative. There's certainly some that are more liberal or more progressive. But this voter ID bill that we're talking about, I mean, it's really designed to impact those that may even be in nursing homes and in rest homes, elderly people that may not have photo ID, young people that may not have photo ID, a host of people. Here in North Carolina, when they compared those that have driver's licenses or some type of photo ID against the registration polls and records, there's over 500,000 people that would be potentially disenfranchised. And we're not talking about simply Latinos. I mean, certainly I'm one of those that believes that America has been a wonderful melting pot. And when it comes to those coming in from other countries, we need to welcome them with open arms and do all that we can to assist them get through our educational system and to lift them up and to do what we can do to make them a part of our filter of our society. I don't have any ill will against any group. So, I mean, I think the latest group to come upon our shores, if you want to put it that way, or across our borders, has been an influx more of Latinos. But I think that they are filling many jobs that certainly many other Americans may not want to fill. But most importantly, they can provide a really wonderful character, flavor, and complement to our workforce. And, you know, if their status is not legal, then we can help them become legal and enable them to do so, and that's appropriate. But I certainly am not one of those that views these voter ID laws as being designed to somehow stop immigration.
If we embrace that, it would be immigration. I believe it would be the single-hand eradication of the Republican Party as we know it, and that's why I do not support immigration.
Well, you see, in Florida, many of the Latinos there, the Hispanic community, in some instances, particularly the Cuban influx, and all that I see and read, they tend to be far more conservative than progressive or liberal, and more, I mean, that's where Mark Rubio, Senator Rubio, is from, Florida. He's Latino, Hispanic, you know. I mean, he's, you know, I think of Cuban ancestry, but I mean, and I don't want to sit there and speak about his ancestry because I'm not 100% sure what it is, but there's certainly contingents within that community that would embrace more conservative principles and ideologies as opposed to more democratic liberal leanings, as you might perhaps find out in Texas, where they have substantial populations. So, I mean, I don't think you can look at it in a monolithic block. And I welcome them to the Democratic Party. I welcome them to America, wherever they may come, regardless of where they may travel from. If they come to our shores and cross our borders, then we need to work with them and provide an opportunity to step up the way we have to other immigrant groups that have come to our shores in the past. But with that said, unfortunately, I'm going to have to remove myself from this conversation. I've enjoyed calling in, and I will leave it to all of the others that are a part of this to continue the dialogue, and let's hope that through open communication and cross-fertilization of ideas that we can encourage all of those, regardless of what their political persuasion, ideologies, or views may be, to get out and vote on Election Day. And, of course, I would encourage you to vote Democratic. Thank you.
Well, I'm just going to add my – can I add my voice to this? Because I don't believe preservation of the Republican Party or even preservation of the Democratic Party is where we should be. I really believe that we should stand for what's constitutional, or even more importantly, what's right when it comes to human beings. And I think that as we look to policies, particularly public policies,
those are the standards that we need to embrace. What does the Constitution guarantee? And secondly, what is right in terms of what should we do for human beings based upon our own code of how we should treat our fellow man? And I think if we start with the preservation of the Republican Party or even the preservation of the Democratic Party, I do believe that the Democratic Party gets it more right when it comes to how we should treat people. But I don't think that the preservation of any party should guide what decisions we make as people. What is constitutional? I think that should guide Americans. What is right? I think that should guide Christian behavior.
I thank you for saying that, however, but I totally disagree with that, because this current administration has done nothing more than trampled over the Constitution, trampled over it, and totally disregarded the Constitution. So that's why I said I just don't really necessarily agree with what you're saying.
Well, that's okay. I don't mind that, but I would say that we had an economy that was had lost 750,000 jobs a month. We had an action where people who even with the voter suppression initiatives are about not only those people who are coming here through immigration, it has consequences in terms of almost Jim Crow-like, in terms of who can participate in the voting process. Those things have inordinately adverse effects on people who are low-wealth people of color than they do of other people. And I think if you're going to embrace a policy like that, you are embracing a philosophy that takes us back rather than forward in terms of how America has become a place where everybody should be valued. And, we came through that. We came through that in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s. Let's not go back to that kind of environment. I don't know where you feel like the Constitution has been trampled upon, but I would say for 43 presidents before this one, we've had actions taken by those people who govern that were not inclusive. And so to label this 44th president as the one who has not lived up to the principles of America denies the real history in which I've traveled, through my 66 years of life. So I hear what you're saying, but golly, man, we've been through a lot, and we've survived, and I can't put on President Barack Obama, a history that dates back far preceding him that did not serve people fully in this country or regard people even as human beings in this country. There's a lot of work that has been done, but there was a lot of work that was done before this time that was a problem.
And I do understand that, but nevertheless, a good country is fundamentally based on capitalism and its growth and its success for our economic development. And I do believe that this current administration is turning us into a welfare state, making us more of a Marxist-type ideology where we become more dependent upon the state. And that's why when Mitt Romney said what he said, I didn't see nothing wrong with what he said, because it was the truth.
We've become a country where more and more of the wealth is concentrated in less and less of the people. And to say that we've become a welfare state when people who are in the top 1% are earning 2, 3, 4 times as much as they were earning a few years ago, where our tax rate has been reduced from 90-some% for those people who make a lot of money down to 30% or less. To say that we are really going in a direction that creates a class of people who are more dependent, I think does not recognize the fact that we have concentrated more and more of the wealth into fewer and fewer of the people. I say that our country is a democracy, not a capitalist You know, capitalism is important in terms of how we run the country. But foremost, America is a democratic country. That is a country that all the people have a voice. All the people have an opportunity to vote, regardless of there is one man, one vote, regardless of those who have or those who have not. If they're in this country and they're citizens, then they are part of the democracy that makes America. So I think fundamentally to our country is us being a democracy. That's where we began. And then all the other systems, the economic systems and other kinds of things are subordinate to us being a democracy where one man, one vote is the rule.
Okay, and I do understand that. And like I said, I respect that. But you cannot ignore the fact that we are by trade capitalist, and the current administration has made us reliant upon handouts, and that is what is impeding our nationalistic growth.
What has made us more dependent upon support is really the lack of jobs that really started with the policies of, in my opinion, George Bush, who reduced the tax rate, who concentrated the wealth in a few, who opened up the opportunity for people to be exploited. Those ideas, I think, are leading us into a country where more and more people get food stamps because they need it, because they don't have jobs. And I think that those policies start with, the sense of, I'll just say it, the Republican sense of what is right. And I think that it leads to the concentration of wealth in a few, and it leads more and more people into suffering. That's why we have come from. That's why more and more people are dependent upon for those of us who are continuing to work, to lend a hand so that they might be able to sustain themselves through a period of lack so that they can again participate again fully in terms of what our country is supposed to be. That's my point of view, man.
One of the things that needs to be said is that he's now living in South Carolina, where people, half of them, don't even know where their next meal is coming from, and that's because they have policy. They have someone who's a head of the government down there, a governor, who does not care about the 47%. It doesn't care about the 80%. And I think it was either you or Senator McGissick said they're voting against their own self interest.
Okay.
I mean, when you vote against your own self-interest and you say that what other people are trying to do to get ahead is wrong, I mean, how will you ever get out of that doldrum?
Okay, Jim, I do apologize. I am in the middle of something right now. I am going to have to step away from the conversation, but I did very much enjoy the dialogue, and I will be back on your next show. And I hope to contribute a whole lot more. Y'all do enjoy the rest of your evening.
Okay. That's okay. Now the thing is that if you understand what I'm saying, gentlemen, there are people who vote against their own self-interest all the time. All the time they vote against their own self-interest. Now, how do you get them to realize that they are doing that? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that as we engage, people like, your caller or the people who are listening in this discussion, that they can see the, no matter how hard they try not to see, that the folly of their positions are revealed. And once that is revealed, they might be led into a point of self-examination that will lead them to come to better conclusions. That's my hope. You know, that's the reason why you have this, these kind of discussions. That's why you try to communicate, not to berate people, but to lead them to an awareness that allows them to come to better conclusions that might be more informed, or that they can see that the positions that they've taken are extreme. So that's my hope.
Okay. But see, the thing is that how did they get in that position to even think that what they're saying is true? Because that's not something that has always been there. It couldn't have been.
Well, we've been doing years of having our points of view somewhat distorted. And I think that for those people who have embraced, you know, the brother said, you know, I want to act on my Judeo-Christian ethics and faith. And they believe that they embrace points of view that are not loving, that are not care for their fellow man, that are not even, you know, biblical, because that's been what's been said to them. And they hear it over and over again, and they embrace these points of view. And it becomes the single criteria by which they make their decision, not looking at the broadness of things, but based upon a single perspective that might tailor their belief system. And I think that that happens quite a bit. You know, all of us are influenced somewhat living in America by messages that have not been appropriate. And Michael, even you and me, you know, have come to conclusions that are based upon mistaken facts, you know. And I think our life effort is to see those things as they are, so that we can make better decisions, so that we don't end up going down a path that is inappropriate. And I think some people have embraced these ideas a little bit more strongly than maybe we have, and they are, in my opinion, misdirected. But if informed, if given a sense of what is a better course for them, they will make, I hope, good decisions.
Well, you're absolutely correct, but that is only with people that have the ideal that, or the idea that you can come to a satisfactory medium ground. The people that embrace those ideas don't want to come to a medium ground. It's their way or the highway. And it's gotten worse since we have a black president in the White House.
Well, Michael, I would say for those people who are so locked into their belief systems that they will go that way regardless, maybe, you know, the time is better spent finding somebody who believes like you do, rather than being engaged in an active discussion with somebody that's so locked into a point of view that they cannot be changed. Once you determine that somebody is lost, you got to say, well, maybe I need to go talk to somebody, you know, who might listen a little bit. Because if a person is lost, you just got to say, well, you know, this is not what I'm going to convince. And maybe I need to spend my time with somebody who might be open to listening at least. And that way you don't get caught into wasteful time for people who have no desire to change their point of view, but only embrace a point of view that they are stagnant on and they will never change. And, you know, I'm saying, you know, hey, okay, that's the way you are. I'm moving on
right.
I, you know, I can't waste my time with you because I think, you know, you might be lost.
Well, before we leave, I need to read you something, and this is very important to understand. Former New Hampshire Governor John Sununu represents the quintessential idea of what greed is, not in the way the Donald emits it or the way the Mister shows by betting someone $10,000 on TV in front of 10 million people, but in the way someone who has never had anything in their life and wants to be in that clubhouse of those who have been born with the proverbial silver spoon in their mouth. Canuto was born in Havana, Cuba, okay, and he was the son of an international film distributor of Palestinian descent who belonged to a Greek Orthodox church in Jerusalem and grew up in the Ottoman Empire of Jerusalem in Palestine, and his mother was born in San Salvador, El Salvador, as part of the mass exodus of Ottoman subjects seeking a better life.
And I didn't know
White
that.
House chief of staff, yeah, the White House chief of staff, he was roundly, and I won't go into it completely, but he was dismissed because he was using money, limousines, $5,000 spent going to Christie's and buying stamp collection. He used government vehicles for the trip, sent the vehicles back to Washington, then took a chartered flight for $47,000 back to Washington.
I did not know this.
There's a man who uses dental appointments and military aircraft. He said, you know, and then the bottom line with Sununu, Sununu lost the right to personally commandeer government airplanes and had to reimburse 3 government trips. But he didn't reimburse it back to what the cost was. I mean, he reimbursed it to what, 1/10 of what the cost is. Okay, a common mistake is the motive. This is what he did. He didn't, they figured $615,000, which would have been the actual cost. Sununu was banished from Republican Party structure for years and has now been resurrected under the Tea Party racist banner of virtue and states' rights. Calling a man who grew up in a single-parent home, who worked his way through college, became the first African-American editor of the Harvard Law Review, then a state senator, and then the first man to run for the very first time for the presidency as a black man elected as the first African-American president. All this is not good enough for Johnson. If we all know why, there are many Johnson Sununus out there. They're all over the conservative radio and talk show air, and they're heard every day with that constant drumbeat that this is a man, this man who is occupying the White House is not an American. He's a foreigner. He's a socialist, a communist, a Muslim, not born here, and does not have the right to occupy our White House.
My goodness.
If he remains longer, the entire country's glorious history and structure will collapse. Of course, all this is nonsense, pure racism. Sununu just said yesterday, people saw last night at the debate, I think the president who revealed himself as being incompetent, lazy, and detached, and now has absolutely no idea of how serious the economy is in this country. There are many more quotes I can use, but they're all the same. None of this would have ever been brought up if the man now leading the most powerful nation in the world was not black. Nothing was ever said when Reagan tripled the nation's budget in the first term or raised taxes more than 11 times or ran when the 241 Marines were killed in Beirut and massacred in a barracks in 1980.